Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast available on your favorite podcast app. This is our annual episode where we dive into one of the largest film festivals in the world, the 2024 South by Southwest Film and TV Festival, complete with info from behind-the-scenes reviews of over 20 film and episodic premieres, including The Fall Guy and Roadhouse, and a whole lot more. So let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson, and also here is Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Okay, for this very special episode, we are going to talk exclusively about the South by Southwest Film and TV Festival, or South By as it's more commonly known, what the festival is, how it works, and especially what movies or TV episodics we saw that you should keep an eye out for. And we got to mention, we're going to talk about, you know, over 25 film and TV and panel events as we go through this episode. But please know there are hundreds. There are so many opportunities and choices and genres and different unique experiences you can have at this festival.
So South by Southwest is one of the largest festivals in the country, encompassing film, music, and even interactive media. Actually, the Sydney one, which actually just had its first year, also has games incorporated to it heavily, kind of like the Austin one used to have a bit more. But we're only going to be talking about the film festival portion, which showcases just about every type of film you can imagine. They really like to tap into all the genres. They also offer keynote speakers, special sessions, panels with various people from the industry, and they even have a trade show. So there's a lot to do.
Yes, and just so you know, they had a lot of a large AI component this year, and that was interesting because it shows what filmmaking can do, what it can accomplish with filmmaking. But man, there were a lot of fans. Amanda, you weren't in Fall Guy, but there's a conversation about AI. There's a whole presentation on AI, and the fans were not thrilled about that component. So that was an interesting dynamic to hear all of this AI talk about what we can do, and fans going, "No, we want real stuff." So it was fascinating. It was fascinating.
They had a heavy emphasis on technology overall, even in some of the panels. And also, thanks for reminding me I didn't get into the Fall Guy.
You're welcome.
Jeez, just yeah. Stab me in the heart while I'm bleeding.
It was really nice seeing Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling together.
Oh, must be nice.
She is a lovely woman. Very lovely.
Just being Knuff out there.
Hannah Waddingham was there. Oh, if he would have sang, "I'm just Ken." In fact, I thought about lying to you and telling you he did, just so you could picture not being there.
Gosh, you're maniacal.
You're welcome. All right, so let's get into it. How was South By for you this year? What do you think?
South By was a little different this year. I don't know about you, but it felt like the vibe overall felt different. Like there weren't as many people partying on the streets of Austin as I feel like there usually are. I just feel like there's usually a bit more variation from day to day. And it felt like it wasn't anything bad. This isn't me saying anything bad. It was just different. It was just a different year for me. You've been going a lot longer than I have, though. Mm-hmm. That was like the biggest thing I noticed was just the people. The people were different.
Yeah, I think this was my 10th, 11th, 12th. I don't even remember the number anymore, but I've been going a long time. So I'm very familiar with South by Southwest and Austin and how everything operates. I think the shuttles were a lot smoother this year than they were last year, but they also could be because now I have it kind of leveled out. Because last year I had some issues with how the shuttle system worked. This year I think they really leveled a lot of that out. It felt busier to me. I mean, I see what you're saying, like the dynamic was a little different in the city as a whole, but I felt like there were more people at all the things than usual. And it could have been because we're finally back at full mass after, you know, the COVID.
Yeah, maybe that.
COVID years, which we covered those too. You know, it was an all online event, but yeah, so it was a little different. It was a lot more crowded. I still enjoyed it. There's a lot of exciting things happening and some great movies premiered, and I didn't get to see as many of the Midnighters this year as I normally would have for various reasons. A lot of it was just a matter of timing, because, you know, when you're trying to see things, schedules affect everything, as you know, from, you know, not seeing Fall Guy. But
ouch.
So Midnighters typically this year were at the Alamo, which is a lot further away from the Violet Crown and the Paramount and the Stateside theaters. And so it takes a lot longer to get there. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you got to plan ahead. And a lot of times the schedules don't match. So I couldn't see as many of those as I normally will. And I love Midnighters. Midnighters are typically, for people that have never listened before, they're horror, they're more genre focused, you know, supernatural, you know, that sort of, there's always some kind of dark tinge to them, which I love.
Yeah. Those ones are usually a lot of fun if you can stay awake for them.
If you can stay awake for them.
Specifically me. Yeah.
I have new
problems. But we also did less scootering this year, so that affected your mobility to get to the theaters faster and see more movies.
I think I spent about $150 on scooters.
Wasn't it ridiculous?
Year, yeah.
It was fun, though.
Yeah, it was fun zipping around Austin, though. That was a good time.
Yeah. Oops.
All right. Well, we're gonna talk about the movies we saw. A few very short clips from inside the festival itself, some from Q&A and panels. Very short. We can't play, obviously, the whole things because that would be wrong. But we're going to give you a taste of what it's like to be at South by Southwest, because the idea is we want to encourage you to go. I firmly believe, and I have for many, many years, this is the best film festival in the world. I like Sundance. It doesn't compare in my mind. Cannes is great if you're into that. I'm not. So for people that have a real plethora, a smorgasbord of tastes, if you will, I like a lot of different things, and they always have a lot of things at this festival. Plus the panels, the keynote speakers, and all of that are just so varied and deep and energetic and interesting. There's whatever you want to see or do during the day and night, it's possible to do. That's why I love this festival. So before we get through what movies and events you saw and the takeaways on them every year, we do need to get a little into the weeds and kind of take us through what the festival is, why it's so huge from a fan perspective, and why they should go.
From a fan's perspective, the biggest thing that is going to draw you in as a film buff or just somebody who enjoys movies.
Or TV. We keep forgetting.
Or TV, yeah.
I've been doing it for so long, we keep forgetting the TV, but TV is a major component these days.
It is, definitely. So they'll have all different types of movies that you could get your hands on, as Aaron and I have already discussed. But it's also really cool because not only do some of the movies you're getting basically like an advanced screening of, per se, but the cooler ones are the ones that, and I know it's kind of sad. It's obviously very bittersweet when you put it like this. There are some movies that are not going to get distribution, or it's going to take a long time for it to get released. So it's not like something that you're anticipating and you're going to see it in a couple months no matter what, because it's coming to theaters. It's, do we even know if it's going to get picked up for distribution? So that's a really cool component of it as a fan, is that you get to see things that may not ever, or may take a while to come to fruition, come to life for the regular average Joe to see. That is at least one of the cooler parts for me. Another really cool part of it is you get to have all of these water cooler conversations. And I really, I am terrible with small talk. I hate talking to people that I don't know, because I just feel so uncomfortable and introverted. But every year somebody breaks me out of my shell while we're waiting in a ridiculous line that usually ends up being worth it, unless you're trying to get in to see the Fall Guy and you're me. But you get these really cool water cooler conversations with these people, not even just about stuff that's at the festival, which is obviously like a big component of what people are going to chat with you about, but you can talk about all the other kinds of things that you're into. I met this one girl. I mean, after like an hour and a half of standing in line together, I thought we were going to be best friends leaving that line. Because you just kind of start to chat about everything.
You still talk to him? Have you caught up?
No, I kept trying to figure out, like, oh, I should have like taken a picture of her badge or like looked her up or something, but I didn't. And I'm so mad at myself because she and I were definitely hitting it off. We were having a really good conversation.
Spiritual
kind of laughing
besties.
Together. Mm. Yeah, festival besties.
I've met a lot of people. I'm the opposite of you. I'm not an introvert. I am.
Yeah, you are like, do, yeah, just it, talking is easy. Just do it.
Yeah, I just walk up to people. I walk up to Walton Goggins. I'm like, hey, what's up, man? I like to walk up to people and you know, try not to bother them, obviously. But I had just interviewed Ian Asham Nelms, who he worked with on Fat Man, so therefore had the in. Anyway, so there's everywhere you go, you run into like-minded people like you while you're waiting in line to see whatever it is. You run into people. I ran into these two ladies. They were wonderful to talk to, lovely people, and they had won their passes through some kind of raffle. And a lady was telling me her fabulous story about how she wasn't even going to bid on it, but then apparently she found out that there were only 25 people that actually bought the raffle tickets for that particular, whatever the cause was. So she's like, I'll buy one. And then she won two tickets, which, you know, these passes aren't exactly cheap. So that's a huge deal, huge get. And I'm like, did you think about selling them? She goes, absolutely. Yeah, I thought about it, but I've never been. I'm in the Austin area. I need to experience this once. And I asked her what she thought. And she's like, this is a fantastic event. I wish I would have come sooner. So that, you know, those kind of cool stories, really cool. You know, you get while you're waiting in line with people. It's not like when you're waiting in line to see Avengers Endgame, where everybody is just, you know, anxious and irritated and everything. Everybody is excited. It's a different environment.
They're eager.
They're all like-minded. I can't say that enough, because they have the same mindset as you. I'm not wasting my money to be here. All right. I spent my time. I'm here. I'm going to enjoy it. When you get in a theater, phones go off. People respect the rules of the theater. I mean, it's wonderful.
See, you had all these lovely conversations about something miraculous. We were talking about how she got hit by a car and the person left.
Okay, well, that's just a weird.
She's like, isn't it common courtesy to at least help somebody up off the ground? I thought that was the thing. But no, they just left her and she left.
Oh, well, that's some craziness. Well, we had some craziness happen at Roadhouse, but we'll wait until we get there to talk about that. That was a little wacky. Unfortunate. But you know what? Let's talk about how the festival works. So in case you didn't know, the South by Southwest Film and TV Festival happens every single March in the heart of Austin, Texas. The next year's, I think, dates are March 7th to the 15th of 2025. And it showcases feature films, shorts, documentaries, episodic premieres, VR projects, panels with your favorite filmmakers, influencers, and political advocates. Once you arrive, you check in, you grab your badge, and then you assemble your spreadsheet of planned events. Although I would say in these days, plan that stuff ahead of time. Have it ready to go, because there's so much going on, it's hard to plan the day of. Films, panels, keynote speeches, those virtual reality simulations, parties, there's a ton to do at South By. And you don't have to worry about a movie or panel you can't get into, because literally you can go next door. You can go to the theater down the street. You can hop on a shuttle and take a ride, get off the shuttle, and you'll find something to do. There's always something to do during South By. A lot of times, it's better than whatever you are planning to do to begin with. I've had that happen every year that I've gone. Every year, I couldn't get into something I really wanted to, unlike Fall Guy, which I got into just fine. And sorry.
If he shows up missing and isn't on the next episode of the podcast, you know why. We should at least caveat this, because this is the third joke you've made about me not getting into Fall Guy, and I think I had two of my own.
I kind
of
think they got it. You didn't get in.
I was going to be nice to you too, jackass.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we should probably caveat for those who don't know sarcasm or don't know Aaron, that he's not actually being this mean to me. He actually felt incredibly guilty and tried to offer me his ticket to get inside. So he was trying to figure out a way to have us swap places if it meant me getting into the movie. So he's actually very kind. He's just giving me a lot of crap.
Just so you understand that scenario, I guess. There's a system at South By. It's called Express Passes, which means because there's so many things going and there's so many people, you can every day, the day before, whenever an event is, you can actually pull up that event and click on, I want to request an Express Pass. And if you have some, you can have, I think, two or four, or it varies depending on who you are or what your badge is. You request it. And if they're all gone, they're all gone. If you get one, great. But you got to do it right, like when the clock strikes 9. And if you don't do it as soon as it turns, well, you're just rolling the dice and we'll see what happens. Now, what that means is express passes are guaranteed. You will get in. You get in. You have to be there at least 30 minutes before the movie or event starts. And as long as you're there by that time frame, you will get into the event. When we did it, Amanda did it right on time. For whatever reason, these things happen in the technical world. The app went to a bad gateway. She didn't get in. Very disappointed. I got it. So she was going to go wait in line. And unfortunately, you know, apparently she would have had to wait like an hour sooner than she got. And she was there very early. That's how long some of these movies are. Like the line was long. I think you said like 6 blocks, 9 blocks. How long was the line?
Something insane. Yeah.
So she did not get in. She did. That's the context. But she did everything she was supposed to do. It just, you know, sometimes that works out. Sometimes that happens where a movie is that in demand, you can't get in. But you got to keep in mind, the Paramount is a 1,200 seat theater. So It's not small. It's a huge theater.
And they always are going to have like a lot of the cast and crew coming to the screening also, because it's a big premiere, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're going to have all those. So that takes away some of the seats, which is fine, as it should. But you're just in an incredibly long line. And I will say, because you had asked me, you're like, did you cry? Like you were really worried about my feelings, which I think is very sweet.
I appreciate it if you just stop telling people about it.
you don't like me dismantling your facade.
Yeah, kind of.
But I was okay with it. Like it sucked, and it obviously sucked standing in line, but I got to meet some cool people and talk to them and talk about other movies. And by the time I got there, I had already kind of exhausted all of my hope, because it had been so many blocks of walking and me being like, there's no chance in hell. And I also realized how incredibly fortunate I have been for however many years that I've gone, that this is the first time this has happened to me. So I had to kind of take it with like a little bit of it's fine, because most people would have had an experience where they didn't get into something they really wanted to. I've gotten into quite literally everything I've wanted to get into, with the exception of this movie.
Which is why you deserve as much grief as I can give you. I've not gotten into
but
plenty
damn
of
it, I was early, okay? I was like, I'm going to wait in this incredibly long line. I just underestimated how long.
You didn't underestimate. You can't tell. You can't tell until...
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
You're in there. Yeah. Unfortunately, sometimes that's how it goes. But a lot of times, then you can go and find something else that you were, you know, that happened to me. I wanted to see
Omni Loop.
I wanted to see Omni Loop that was playing, and that line was too long. I couldn't get in. I couldn't get the express pass when I waited in line. I couldn't get in. It happens. It was quite the bummer, but what are you going to do?
Well, so I have a question for you now that we kind of know a lot about the festival on like a high level. So we're obviously there for the film and TV portion, mm-hmm. right? But we've already covered how there are a lot of different avenues that you can explore. If you weren't there for film and TV, what would you be most excited to be there for?
Well, that's interesting.
Whether it be a topic or just like even just a section like the music section or interactive or whatever.
Well, I'm not a music guy, so I would, but if you are in the music festival is renowned as one of the best in the country as well. And that runs the week after the film and TV festival. So for 2 weeks, if you live in Austin, I'm sure you probably go on vacation because you still
RIP,
be there.
Yeah. Airbnb, that's brilliant, actually. Just Airbnb your house.
Right. But I love their technical panels that they have. They have a lot of technical, like VR and like AI, things like that. Like they're always looking at what's coming in technology, not only just in filmmaking, but in general. They have a lot of keynotes from people of stature, you know, whether you like them or not, Katie Couric, Meghan Markle, Selena Gomez, like they were all there this year, and a lot of other ones. I'm just referencing ones that one of us were at. There are a lot of, there's so much you can do. Like, honestly, I would be fine. If I couldn't get into a movie, I would just go see panels and hear people speak. There's so much to do at that festival. Not only that, there's events, there's parties, there's, you know, community things where they like, hey, as long as you got a badge, you can come into this event, this party. There's a lot of that going around too. We hardly ever get to do that stuff because we're seeing movies the whole time. But that stuff is going on all over the city. I mean, it's a wild, crazy event. It really is. I don't know if I answered your question, but that's what I'm going
to. You did. Basically, like it sounds like a combination of some of the some of the interactive stuff, but mostly the panels and information.
Yep.
Yeah. I would agree. I think I could do the music for like a couple days, but when I don't know what I'm listening to, I can't sing along to it. And it's just not as fun if I don't get to be the life of my own party. So I'd probably do like a day or two of the music stuff, or like catch some of it at the end of the nights or whatever. But the panels are really cool. I do like them. Like the ones that I've attended have been pretty good quality. That seems like a very bizarre way to phrase that, but they give you like one of the panels I went to this year was from MIT, and they were talking about just what you were talking about, upcoming technology. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. And at the very end of it, they were like, by the way, Harvard, MIT would like you to vote on what the 11th upcoming technology priority should be. I was like, what? You get to do that? That's cool.
Hey, there you go.
That would probably be mine too.
You may be part of the future.
I am. I voted.
Well, good. I'm glad they took your non-technical.
My electronic pity vote.
Yeah, your electronic pity vote. I like it. All right. Well, let's talk about the movies and TV that we were able to experience at the festival, as well as any experiences, you know, in respect to them. What we're going to do for anybody that's never listened before is we're going to give you a quick synopsis of each film that Amanda or myself have seen. I'll tell you what our brief thoughts on the film or TV episodic is and what their final score is. Remember, if you've never listened to our show before, we rate every film on if $10 is the full price of admission, that's the Hollywood Outsider way. And there'll probably be a few surprises along the way. So we're not going to go in any particular order, but there will be a little mini awards of what we loved at the end. Here we go. So I'm going to start with Backstop.
Riley, who is a mid-level cheerleader, is given an opportunity to cheer for the Thunderhawks. With a competition looming, Riley must navigate her crippling anxiety, same girl, her relationship with her girlfriend, and her desperate need for approval from her new coach. It stars Devery Jacobs. It's directed by D.W. Watterson, and I will call out that this has Evan Rachel Wood, which I didn't realize she was even in it until you had mentioned something.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about Backstop, what you liked, didn't like, loved.
Mm. Loved.
Mm. Oh, I love that start.
Mm. Mm. Loved Devery Jacobs. She's the lead. It really kind of shows the passion, the intensity, the desperation, the anxiety of someone who's striving to be the best in what they love, right? Like they're cheerleading, trying to be the best backstop, if you will, the person who's basically holding the person when they're jumping to the top of a plateau or whatever. I'm not an expert cheerleader, please.
I was going to say, this is the most hilarious description I've ever heard in my life.
Do you know what a backstop is? You were a cheerleader, weren't you?
I was a back, yeah.
Okay. Explain what that position is then.
Essentially, it's somebody they're creating the stability for the pyramid or just the individual who's going to be who's a flyer.
That sounds way smarter than anything I just said.
They're just holding them stable, and then they're also going to help lift them into the air and do their pivots and things like that. So,
well, I really,
they are stability and support.
Okay. Got it. They hold the structure. I really liked her performance, and I thought it was very strong. Evan Rachel Wood always crushes it. She walks in, everybody else looks weaker just because she's that good. I firmly believe she's a fantastic actress. It just needs the right window, I guess, and the right product. Westworld didn't do it for her, but man, she deserves to definitely be up there. She's wonderful as always. What I will say is D.W. Watterson has a lot of shaky cam, and it's almost like the camera is trying to replicate the intensity by the shaking.
Oh,
and that
no.
When the camera is holding more still and it's focused on the characters, when we're just focused on character work, I enjoyed the film immensely. But every time we get into some kind of action set centerpiece, or I wouldn't really call it action, but, you know, doing the cheerleader. Well, those are action. Yeah, it's really intense mm-hmm. physical workouts. We're using more camera tricks than letting the actors do the speaking with their actual intensity. So it really kind of brought the film down a little bit for me. So if $10 is full price admission, I give it $5.50. It's something that I enjoyed. I think it's worth a watch. And I think probably if you were in you were a cheerleader, if you were in that kind of competition, I think you'll probably enjoy it more. I really love how it ended. So it's got a strong ending. It's just really that some of the camera work really just bugged me.
I feel that pain, though. That's one of my biggest camera work pet peeves is like unnecessary shaky cam.
Yeah. And there's quite a bit of it, sadly. All right. You know, we're going to go to a fun one because we actually made an attempt or a point to see a few less headliners and see some of the smaller films that weren't going to get enough love. But this one isn't one of them. This is Roadhouse. We're going to talk about Roadhouse. So this is directed by Doug Liman. And this adrenaline-fueled reimagining of the 80s cult classic, ex-UFC fighter Dalton takes a job as a bouncer at a Florida Keys roadhouse. It's literally called Roadhouse this time. It's ridiculous. Only to discover that this paradise is not all that it seems. In other words, there's some mofos that want to bring this thing down for their own nefarious reasons. Stars Jake Gyllenhaal, Daniela Melchior, Billy Magnuson, he's your bad guy. Jessica Williams owns the bar. I love her. I wish she was in the movie a little bit more than she is. And of course, we have, making his acting debut, the great UFC fighter and ridiculous character himself, Conor McGregor.
Woo!
Are you a fan? Were you a fan before you walked into this?
He's probably one of the few ones that I've actually made an effort to watch.
So let me ask you this.
Does that say anything?
Yeah, it does. When you walked out, were you a bigger fan or a lesser fan?
I was definitely a bigger fan. He has a ton of charisma. He knows how to steal the scene and the show, both in movies and in real life, including the Q&A panel.
He just kept taking the microphone from everybody.
He was like, I got this, yeah. Man. Like, you could tell he was hyped, and I loved his energy. And then, obviously, we have the more notable, like, humanistic side of it, which we'll talk about, like, that story, I guess, in a little bit. But I definitely came out a fan of him.
Yeah, I did, too. I knew Conor McGregor. I've seen his fights multiple times. I'm a fan of him as a fighter. He's one of those guys. He's like a wrestler. It's a ridiculous character when he's on stage and he's on screen, so to speak. And it's no different in the movie. He's ridiculously over the top, but it fits the movie perfectly. The first time you meet him, he's strolling down the street, butt ass naked. Like, he's that confident. He's that guy in the whole movie. And going into the movie, my one concern, and I like Jake Gyllenhaal a lot. He's one of my favorite actors. One of the best actors of his generation. But you're going to have to do some movie magic to convince me that Jake Gyllenhaal can beat the shit out of Conor McGregor.
100%.
I'm sorry. Nothing against Jake. I don't care how ripped you are. It's not about the muscle mass. It's about, I've seen him in a fight. He's a spider monkey. You ain't, Jake. They did a very good job. They made all the fights seem very fair and reasonable. I was, Jake Gyllenhaal really won me over. This is a franchise, I love the original movie because of its ridiculousness and also how serious Patrick Swayze took that role. Like, he took it seriously. Like, he was acting as if he was in Shakespeare or something, and the movie, the whole plot was ridiculous. Gyllenhaal does the same thing. He really takes it seriously. He's really, like, trying to play a character in just a wild environment, and I think he brought the thunder. What do you think?
Oh, he was fantastic. I honestly didn't have tons of doubts about him just because I had seen him in another like boxing movie, Southpaw, I think is what it was called.
Yep.
And he was really good in that. So I knew he was capable of taking on a character like this. Obviously had reservations about him taking on this specific character and in this film
exactly.
As a whole.
Yeah.
And to your point, I also had reservations about how the hell are they going to convince me that Jake Gyllenhaal can beat up Conor McGregor? Like, Conor McGregor's energy alone would make me question if somebody could beat him up. You know what I mean? Like, he just has that BDE. Yeah. So I agree, though. I remember I came out of that and I was like, holy crap, they really, really got me feeling like this was an equitable, fair fight. Like, every time that they were up against each other, you know, there was some level of predictability here and there, more so in terms of like what they would do. But in terms of the fight itself, they believed you could buy into Jake Gyllenhaal being this big badass. So
you could. If $10 is full price of admission, what do you give Roadhouse?
I give it $7.50.
Yep, I give it $7. I think the action is fun. The movie is ridiculous, but it's fun throughout. Like, the action is intense. I mean, the fights are very brutal. There are teeth flying. There are bones breaking.
They are so well choreographed as well.
So well done. Director Doug Liman, who I know made some waves because he said he was going to boycott the premiere. He didn't. He was there. He sat literally right across from me. I know he was there.
In person. He stood up. Supported the whole thing.
He didn't join them on stage. So I guess that's his boycott, whatever. But he did show up to the premiere and supported the film. So even though it's going to be on Prime, probably by the time you listen to this, it's worth the watch, man. It's worth it. And, you know, I'm going to share a little piece of the Q&A here with you in just a second. But I want to tell you the Conor McGregor story. Is it all right to tell that part?
Yeah.
Okay. So Amanda and I were walking out, and there was a scene right there. Somebody passed out. Turns out they were dehydrated. They're okay. I just want to clear that up right away. And so Amanda got ahead of me. She's calling 911 because she's doing the thing that you're supposed to do. Everybody says you should do to get help because someone is in dire need of assistance. Right.
All we know is we're hearing call 911 help. Yeah, yeah. And so
Amanda
screaming.
Amanda is trying to save the world. Good for her. I didn't do that. Shame on me. But so she gets a little ways ahead of me, and Conor McGregor comes out, and, you know, he's like, hey, man, you know, very, very nice. And he's just all he's saying, you know, I think we exchanged like a hello and hey, fan kind of thing. And then he just said, where's Artie? You know, which I assume is it turns out it's his manager, I guess. That was the person that was ill. I saw a side of that guy that I've never seen in all the interviews and everything else, you know, because he's always in character. That was a genuine friend. Like, that was, I saw a guy that I think probably he should get more coverage too, because I saw the person, you know, like who he is underneath, you know, when it matters most. And that's a guy who loves his friend and would do anything to get his friend. Cause like he bolted right over there. Didn't care about the cameras. Didn't care about everybody taking video and all that. Cause people are assholes. Somebody's hurt. You shouldn't be filming it. Like, have some common decency. He didn't care about any of that. All he cared about was that his friend was okay. And did everything he could to make sure that he stayed awake and he was conscious. You know, it was just a really cool personal human moment. And I'm not going to go into more detail than that because I don't think it's my business, but I thought that was very, very cool to see a different layer to the guy.
Yeah. You see him as this big kind of like goofball, I guess, is what you anticipate.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah, just complete ridiculousness. And we had just seen, you know, 2 hours of that on top of, you know, seeing his bouncy personality in person. But for him to just kind of like autopilot into protecting and like making sure that somebody he cares about is okay, mm-hmm. and making sure that people are doing what they need to help take care of his friend. You know, he wasn't just the bystander who's like, what's going on? Are you okay, man? Can I do anything? Or, hey, you guys come help him. It was like, you know, he was in the trenches.
He went right to it, man. Didn't blink an eye. Right to it.
So I love that.
I love that he didn't. That's a moment so many actors and whatnot would care about. I'll tell you what, I didn't see any other cast come out. Just saying. But he flew out there. Like no one could stop him. No one could stop him. I was impressed.
Great story for sure.
I think everyone would agree when you're seeing someone that is known as an athlete come into a movie, you're like, can they pull this off? And I think you were sensational. Hard work, but what about the process of making a movie kind of shocked you?
Yeah, it's very hard work for sure. All the characters, and when I saw them come to life on the screen, I thought to myself as I was watching the movie, I'm gonna fuck this up. I'm gonna ruin it, but I'm no actor. But you know, what I do know looking at that with the crowd, I have a lot more to give. I feel I have a lot more. So I'm excited about that. Let's see, but hope you all enjoyed the movie. Jay, thank you so much.
Question for you, Jake. Who was your favorite movie tough guy growing up? Who were you channeling? Who was the guy for you?
Well, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't bring Mr. Swayze back in the mix. Because, you know, for me, like, as a kid, though it wasn't at first Roadhouse, it was Point Break. Yeah. And subsequently, my sister took me to see Dirty Dancing, like, 14 years. So, even though, I mean, he was even a tough guy in that. But really, ultimately, I think he was just packed with charisma, so much so that it's pushed this story all the way even to here. And so I just got to give it up to Patrick, and he was just an amazing person.
That his friend is okay also. We should,
yes,
we did mention okay. That, but just to reiterate, yeah. His friend is okay.
His friend is fine.
So another film that you saw, which you gave, you talked about this one quite a bit, and it's called Magpie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's directed by Sam Yates, and it's got Daisy Ridley in it. She is one of the stars. When mm-hmm. Ben and Annette's daughter is cast in a film alongside glamorous movie star Alicia, Ben is quickly drawn into Alicia's world. Annette is left at home with the baby, pushed to her emotional limits and psychologically on the brink. Annette being Daisy Ridley's character, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Yeah. So tell us about this one, because you talked to me, you know, you talked to me about this one quite a few times and seemed to really enjoy it.
Yeah, I really dug this one. I really did. I thought it was, it's very Hitchcockian. I hate to use that term, but it's right up my alley. It's straight up my alley. And what's funny is I understood what was going on pretty early on. It wasn't like at the end going, oh my God, you could be. Cause I mean, I think it's going to take some people by surprise, but I got what was going on. But it was just really kind of just cool how it played out. I mean, you basically have Daisy Ridley's character is, you know, she's just tired of always being the at-home mom. You know, she basically gave up her career to be a mom. Not that she's against it. Meanwhile, her daughter's cast in this role and her husband keeps taking her to set. And she starts to think he's falling for this lead actress in the role because they've had several conversations. They have pancakes together when she doesn't allow her daughter to have pancakes except on the weekend. It's a special thing. You know, so you... And it rides the line of, is she over the line or is she justified in her up being upset? I mean, they're married and this guy is basically, theoretically could be pining for this other woman. So who's in the right? Who's in the wrong? And it's really playing on that. And then it just builds to, it just spirals out of control or does it? You know, it becomes it's a very captivating thriller. That is straight up my wheelhouse.
Do they, because they talk about her being psychologically on the brink, and maybe you're able to say this and maybe you're not, but do they make it, like, is the focus on what is reality and what is extremism from her perspective? Like, is she being crazy and we never really know? Or do we have, like...
No, we know.
We have solid concrete. We know that everything is experiencing, that we're experiencing on the screen actually happened. It's just... her reaction to these things.
You know, by the end of the movie, what's real and what's not.
Okay.
There is some playing with it as you go, and it's done well though. So it's just, they're playing with, you know, how it unfolds. I don't want to say too much. It's really one of those things where you might be surprised and I don't want to take any surprise away.
That's fair. Okay.
So if $10 is the full price of admission, I give Magpie a $6.50. Just because I do think it's a little predictable, but man, it's a fun thriller. I think you guys are going to like it.
Okay.
Yeah. Now we're going to move to Azrael, however you want to say it. You can say it however you want because I don't say a damn thing in the entire movie. All right. Well, many years following the apocalypse, a devout cult of mute zealots hunts down a young woman who has escaped her imprisonment. And it stars Samara Weaving, and that's all you need to know because she is a scream queen who was there and a mm-hmm. lovely woman in person, by the way. She's very funny. Now, I want to preface once again that she does not speak. No one speaks in this movie.
Take that back. There's one person who has like five words.
There's hardly any speaking in the entire movie. There's one.
And there's no English.
There's no English at all. But it's written by Simon Barrett, who wrote The Guest, which is one of my favorite South by movies, actually. So what did you think about Asriel and this whole concept, especially the idea of never hearing people talk throughout the movie, and not in a Quiet Place way, although there is a little of that, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the biggest thing that this movie is going to potentially struggle from is the fact that we had Bird Box, we had A Quiet Place, A Quiet Place 2, and are people going to feel like this is just another use of that? Like, is it turning into a cliche, I think, is the only thing I worry about because of the timing. However, when you watch the movie, it is so much fun, A, to watch Samara Weaving do her thing. And you said she's a scream queen. Yeah, she is, but she literally doesn't get to scream out loud. So True. She is.
That's funny.
It is. And she is an incredible actress for her and the entire cast, if I'm being perfectly honest, to be able to carry an entire film without exchanging any dialogues, to be able to rely on the body language, the conversation that's happening between the two people without them using their mouth. You know what I mean? That is very impressive for a movie to pull off. No less when there's like a horror film and you're trying to not zone in on every single sound that's around you, like A Quiet Place, but just not having that dialogue, a first time filmmaker, someone who's not as experienced or something like that, doesn't have the full vision, may not be able to properly execute. I think that director E.L. Katz did a great job, because I was entranced in this the entire time. I will say I was like one of those, is this going to turn into an A24 kind of like weird The Witch type of movie or whatever? It certainly has some of those common A24 elements and themes, but I think it's done in a very indie horror type of way that makes it so enjoyable. Like I had fun, and there are some crazy scenes. Some crazy things that happen.
The violence is wild. It keeps getting amped up, and it builds to a like, wait, what kind of ending? So you will be thinking about it when you walk out going, wait, what? What is happening? So
it is crazy. And also when you think about how low of a budget it had too, that always makes me more impressed with films when I understand, what they were working with and what they produced, because it is a well-made movie on top of it all.
Yeah, it's very intense, very intense. So $10 for price admission. What did you give Asriel?
I gave that one $6.
Yep. I gave it $6 too. I think it's,
look at this.
Hey, look at that. I think it's worth the watch, and it's entertaining. I think it would have been better with dialogue, but it would have been a little bit of a different movie.
It would have been completely different. It would have been, I don't know. I think it would have been more like a thriller. I think it would have turned out to be more like a thriller if they could exchange dialogue. This made it more of like, I don't know. I don't want to say like it's not campy, but
no, it's not. But it is a little B movie-ish.
Yeah.
But Samara Weaving, she is the real deal. Like she crushes it.
Oh my gosh,
she crushes it. You feel every ounce of ow with her entire plight. Like she just gets her ass handed to her, but she keeps fighting no matter what. Keeps fighting. Love it. All right, next one is Hunting Days. And this one, Nina is a young, tempestuous woman, and she's taken in by a group of hunters in a remote cabin. And in the midst of this tough yet endearing male micro-society, she finally feels like she belongs. And then a mysterious stranger arrives and disrupts their newfound haven, and things just go sideways. Now, you told me a lot of what happens in this, so I know there's a lot you can't talk about that what happens in this. So what did you think about Hunting Days?
So first of all, I love that the description includes a tempestuous woman. I can't even say that word correctly.
Tempestuous.
That word. The most simplistic way that I can say what this movie is about is there's a woman who is in need of assistance. She calls a friend while she's with one of her pimp's guys, and some things start to go down. This is like the first 2 minutes of the movie. She decides, screw this. You're not going to talk to me, touch me, look at me any type of way that I'm not okay with. So I'm out. You can tell the pimp that, which is obviously a big deal whenever, a sex worker is leaving the industry.
Pimps ain't happy. Nope.
But she doesn't care. But that leaves her kind of stranded in this friend acquaintance that she has. You know, she tries to use her seductiveness on him. And she had just done a party for him and his friends like the weekend before or whatever. So she's like, hey, you're going to be at this bachelor party like in the woods or whatever. You know, maybe I can hang out with you for the weekend because the bus station is closed. And so she's got to wait. Well, we'll see. You know, I'll take you. Yeah. She gets there and essentially it turns into like a male initiation. And I want to preface this by saying it's not like weird and creepy because she's a girl. Okay. Like she is a beautiful woman. And of course, you know, you can tell that they notice that, but they don't disrespect her. And that's something like there was probably only one time where someone tried and all of the guys were like, hey, no. Like, just because you're drinking doesn't mean you make a move type thing. So get that out of the way.
Okay, I like this. I respect this.
It really is very much like, is she one of the guys? Can she be one of the guys, do what the guys are doing for the weekend, right? Like, this guy is about to get married. He wants to be out partying with his wolf pack, essentially, and they very much treat themselves like a pack. You know, if you're part of it, we'll protect you to the end of your days, right? But if you're not part of it, or if you ever decide to leave it, you can't. I mean, that's not part of the rules.
That's how a wolf pack works.
Yeah. So as they start to go on this journey of this, you know, fun weekend and they're doing all these things, this other stranger gets, you know, pulled into the ropes and brought here. And that's when everything goes super haywire. It's very, you know, it gets violent. It's aggressive. There's times where it's trying to mess with your mind a little bit. Like, you know, these people are doing drugs and drinking on the weekend. So you're not entirely sure as an audience member. Yeah. What? You're not entirely sure at the get-go, you know, if some things were a hallucination, if some things were done by these people while they were on drugs, if there's something out there or someone out there. So you really don't know what's going on until the very end. And it just has a couple really good twists and turns. So it's a fun movie for anybody who is really drawn to or has experienced, you know, being a woman, where you fit more in with guys, like you can easily fit in with guys, or you're like, you love to hang out and do all the guy things, and you can prove yourself. Half the time, you can probably do it better than the men. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of follows that, but then it turns into a horror, and it's a nice blend. I liked it a lot.
So if $10 full price permission, what do you give that one?
I'm giving it $6.50. I should also caveat and note for you guys, part of it is spoken in French and part of it is not. But majority of you're going to have to read a lot of subtitles.
And it's Hunting Daze, D-A-Z-E. D-A-Z-E.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's a play on words. Shh. Now, I didn't see the movie, but because of the way Amanda described it, I really wanted to. So that's one I definitely want to see.
Yeah, I think it's a good one to watch. And the main actress, and I apologize for slaughtering your name, Nahima Ritchie, she is incredible. She is so fun to watch. And like every second, I'm like, man, this tiny little girl, she can hang with the guys better than the guys. You know what I mean?
I really want to see that.
Yeah. So then we have Switch Up. And Switch Up is one of the nation's top talk show hosts finds himself stranded at a homeless shelter where he meets a young widow. He falls in love and realizes the path to happiness lies in helping others. Oh, that sounds so sweet. Hmm. Tell us a bit about Switch Up.
Okay. This is directed by Tara Pernia, and it's definitely aiming for like a family-friendly comedy. I have a cold. I'm sorry if I sound a little nasally. It's an amiable movie. And I hate to use that term because it makes it sound like it's not good. It's not bad. It's just, it's trying to do too many things. Christian De La Fuente, it's basically a riches to rag story. It's a guy who built himself up. He's got this great talk show. He's got this world around him. He's rich. He's kind of vain. He's a little bit full of himself. And then there's a Ponzi scheme that he's not really part of, but it costs him everything because his assets get froze. He's broke. Now he's got to be homeless. And he ends up falling in love with somebody, with the woman that runs the homeless shelter, who's Julia Restrepo. And she's wonderful. Like, her performance is great. Like, she is a talented woman to watch, for sure. Then there's a whole subplot where his manager is basically kidnapped because she understands what's going on, and she's held for an absurd amount of time, and it's played for laughs, but it shouldn't be funny on any level, really. So it's trying to do too much. So it becomes a little bit convoluted. When it works, it is sweet. Jeff Fahey pops up here. I always love Jeff Fahey. He's always very sweet as kind of like this dying homeless guy. And I think the leads are charming enough, and they really carry as much as they can. But unfortunately, the plot's a little convoluted. So I would give it $5 out of 10. I think it's worth a watch if your family's looking for a little family-friendly entertainment, but it could have been so much better.
All right. And that is Switch Up. Next, we have The Uninvited. Rose and Sammy's Hollywood Hills party takes a chaotic turn as elderly stranger Helen exposes hidden truths, reigniting old flames and unearthing secrets. I want to be Helen's friend. Rose confronts her past, leaving everyone questioning their existence and desires. This has your man, Walton Goggins.
Sure did.
And it has my man, Pedro Pascal.
Sure does.
And it is directed and written by Nadia Connors. Tell us about The Uninvited, because this sounds incredible.
Okay, it's good. It's good. I wouldn't call it incredible.
I just love an elderly lady coming in and being like, I have all the pipe and hot tea, and I'm going to ruin everybody's life.
It's kind of sweet in a way. But what happens is you have, you know, Elizabeth Reeser is the lead actor, and she's Rose, and she's very sweet and charming. And also she's an actress who's kind of a has-been in many respects. You know, it takes place in Hollywood, so it's a lot of Hollywood-ish talk. It's really a film about women and aging and what it means to them versus what it means to the men in their lives.
They get to
make these life choices and whatnot. And meanwhile, you know, the women, they have to suffer harsher penalties in some respects. That's a big part of it. And it's also relationships and pasts, and when do you move past your past and things like that. But I really just kind of love how Elizabeth Reeser approaches this as Rose. Sammy is Walton Goggins in a way you haven't seen him before, which is also very nice. And he's also, I found out his wife is Nadia Connors, the writer and director. So that's a cool fun fact. But he's really not playing a character. He's playing just a man for once in his career. He's playing somebody normal. And
oh wow,
he's just dealing with life struggles and you know, being overwhelmed and his own life choices and what he wants to do and his problems. And she's just trying to come to grips with the fact that Hollywood doesn't cast her anymore because she's gotten too old for parts. And it's really like I don't want to say a screwball comedy because it's not nonstop funny, because there's a lot of dramatic arcs to it, but it's a really interesting take on that sort of dynamic. And Lois Smith plays the elderly woman who comes into their life and they can't really figure out why for a big portion of it. But she does, I wouldn't say she wrecks the night or anything, but because she's there, it adds a dynamic that pulls people away from what they would be doing. And of course, Pedro Pascal's here, and he's kind of playing against type too. It's a very charming, funny, dramatic film that I think is well worth a watch. And I really, really like Nadia Connors' writing, and especially how she shoots a scene and kind of, it weaves you in and out. So you feel like it all takes place in one place for the whole night. Apparently she originally set this up as a play, and it works for the movie because she really has a smooth flow for how the narrative works. So I really enjoyed it. I give it $7 out of 10. I really enjoyed it.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And Walton Goggins, of course, was wonderful. It's what he does. You know, he can't help it. Guy can't help it. All right. So you saw The Hobby, which was directed by Simon Ennis. It's a documentary. Are Games the Meaning of Life? The Hobby is a funny, affectionate, character-driven portrait of the massive subculture of modern board games, featuring a fascinating and diverse group of subjects who find deep meaning in meaningless pursuits, quote-unquote meaningless. What is the hobby? Is it really? I mean, it sounds like something up your alley, but did you like it as much as it sounds?
Yeah. So the hobby is a documentary strictly about board games. This isn't like diving into like video games or any sort of variations.
Is this like Dungeons and Dragons kind of thing? Or
nope, not even that. Not even like role playing games. Just like straight up like Catan, Monopoly.
Wow. Oh, gotcha.
But the more unique and,
involving,
more
immersive.
Yeah, like individually created type games that are popular for people nowadays. But it also, follows and treks back a little bit of the history for board games. And it eventually ends up moving into the competition for the World Series of Board Games Tournament. I don't think that's the right name, but it's close enough. You'll figure it out. And so you're kind of following these different people and their pathways that lead up to this event. And you find out that, that these people all have different reasons for pursuing this hobby of playing board games. And they're also all like very extremely involved. Like this is a core piece of their life, is being involved in the game world in some capacity. And so it's very sweet and touching and endearing. There are games in here that they mentioned that I've never even heard of, which was kind of cool because I'm like, hey, I need to go play those games. Kickstarter games that they, bring up that other people have invented and things like that. And so I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. Finally, a couple games that I recognize. I'm like, Mysterium made it. Heck yeah. but it's a fun documentary. I will say the characters that they follow, the people are, they all have very unique personalities, which helps vary up the documentary for you. However, the one thing that I have with it that I struggled with is kind of the structure in which the film is laid out. So this could be a combination. I think it's primarily editing because of the way that it was pieced together. If you see that,
I do know.
Game reference.
Yeah,
thank you. But it also could be just the way that, it was what they decided to involve themselves in. Cause at the beginning, for probably the first third, you're like, which direction is this going? Are we focusing more on like a family or two and how they got into gaming? Are we following are we looking at the history of gaming? It kind of blends together in that first third. Figures itself out, by the second act, if you will. And by the third, we're having a good time. We're now invested in these characters. So overall, a solid documentary. I don't think I came away with too much new information, but I did learn about a couple of games that I'm excited to try out. So,
what was your score again?
For this one, I give it $5.
Okay. All right. Our next one's
not a bad score. 5 is average.
No, yeah, it's entertaining, right? It's enough for an afternoon matinee. Next one's Arcadian. And just, Nicolas Cage stated that he might be retiring soon. 3 or 4 movies, he says, he thinks he's said all that he can about cinema, but he's in this one. And after a catastrophic event depopulates the world, a father and his 2 sons must survive their dystopian environment while being threatened by mysterious creatures that emerge only at night. It stars Nick Cage, Jaden Martell from It, Maxwell Jenkins, and Sadie Sovereall. It's directed by Ben Brewer, by the way. This is a really pleasant surprise. I really, really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I had a fun time with it also. And I have to give it some additional like extra credit because I'm not crazy on sci-fi movies or like alien type, like monster creatures, things that like, I don't know, any sort of like monster or creature. I'm very turned away from typically.
But this one really won you over?
Yeah, by the end of it, I was like, honestly, not even by the end. I really enjoyed it. I struggled for the first like 30 seconds of the film with the shaky cam because we're in like an action sequence. So we come back to that filmmaking style.
It felt like it got more immersive after that.
It did. And it truly was like the first 30 seconds. I got after we get past that, it's significantly improved. And this is just a matter of preference. OK, like I'm not knocking the way that the film is made. I just am not a fan of that type of filmmaking.
Nope, I don't like it either. Find another way to accentuate intensity, you know? There's other ways to do it.
Yeah. So just matter of preference. But yeah, the story itself has so much heart in it in so many ways. And it's a story that I feel like quite literally anybody could connect to for one reason or another. So whether it's like the sibling story, it's the father parent story, it's, you know, a romance story, like there's something in there that you can connect with. And then on top of that, you know, you have this backdrop of this catastrophe dystopian world that they're trying to survive in.
And monsters and with cool designs, like it's cool, super cool design work.
Yeah, super cool. There were also like a couple moments that were kind of funny that I really, really didn't expect it. Even in like a significant moment, I was like, I did not expect to laugh right now.
No, and I was very happy with the lead cast, Jaden Martell and Maxwell Jenkins, the brothers. And, you know, they have different approaches. I mean, Maxwell Jenkins will make you want to bounce him down some stairs for a couple of choices he makes. And he still gets you back, you know, before before the movie's over. And you still appreciate their relationship. And Nick Cage, he's Nick Cage. Come on. At this point, he's just freaking Nick Cage. You know he's going to deliver. The guy doesn't half-ass anything. I don't care how bad the movie is. He's always the best thing about it. And he does his thing here as well. And it's a fun monster movie with heart, and I don't think we get enough of that. It's kind of in the vein of A Quiet Place and that sort of thing, for sure. You know, but more of an indie film. But I really enjoyed it. I'd give it 750, personally. You?
I've kind of teetered on the price of this just because I wasn't sure exactly where I landed at, but kind of rehashing the story. And one thing that I do want to call out also is there are significant segments without Nick Cage's presence. Mm-hmm. And the two sons, they are just incredible at keeping, so Jaden and Maxwell, they're so incredible at keeping the interest of the audience. Like it never fades with Nick Cage not being on screen, which I did not expect to have these two young actors hold up an entire film without, you know, one of the main actors that is probably going to be a big draw for a lot of people. But they held up the movie, and that to me is like, wow, that's impressive. Absolutely. Like you guys are really, really good actors. So I'm going to go with $7 for Arcadian.
And hey, before we move on, I just want to let you know that you can bring home Bob Marley himself, Bob Marley One Love, on digital right now. You can celebrate the life and music of an absolute icon who inspired generations through his message of love and peace and unity. You can buy Bob Marley One Love on digital today. You get over 50 minutes of behind-the-scenes footage, as well as deleted scenes. It's available at participating retailers, anywhere you can find a digital copy. Rated PG-13 from Paramount, and we're going to give away a few of these because we want to spread the love, if you will. So if you want to enter the contest to win a copy, a digital copy of Bob Marley One Love, you can do so. Just email contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com with the subject line One Love, your name, and a screenshot of you sharing this South by Southwest episode. You do those three things, bam, you're automatically entered into a contest to win a digital copy of Bob Marley, One Love. And we will reach out to the winners as we draw them randomly. All right, thanks everybody. And we're going to get back to the show.
Then we move into Dead Mail, which I thought was about the post office, and it kind of is.
Kind of.
But not what I thought.
Kind of.
An ominous bloody help note finds its way to the desk of a seasoned dead letter investigator at a 1980s Midwestern post office, leading him down a violent, unforeseen path to a kidnapped keyboard engineer and his demented business associate. It's directed and written by Kyle McConaughey and Joe DeBoer, and it stars Sterling Mason Jr.
Well, this was an interesting one. I didn't know what the hell to expect. I thought it was going to be this long, drawn out, like murder mystery kind of thing, or I was kind of hoping that was what it was going to be. And I will say the movie gives you a curveball about, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes into it, and it becomes a completely different movie than it seems like it is at the beginning.
Okay.
That's not a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing.
I was going to say, how do we feel about this?
I feel good about it. It's nice to be surprised. I don't get surprised very much in movies, but I was definitely surprised because it took a complete and utter left turn. But yeah, it starts off that basically some, you know, a male investigator who is just trying to find out, is this legit? I mean, I got a letter saying that somebody was kidnapped, you know, the police even take it seriously. So then it kind of escalates from there. And that's all I want to say about it because of that big turn. I will say this. Yes, it's about someone who is kidnapped. Yes, it's about that investigation and how it unravels. It's shot very 80s VHS style. So it's not clear and crisp and smooth. I mean, it's really kind of edgy and grainy and the way that it's shot, and it's shot very much like it's at the time. So everybody's got 80s hair, you know. I really enjoyed it, man. I didn't love it, but it really took several turns that I didn't expect and made for a very riveting. It's more of a thriller. It's not really a horror movie. It's more of a thriller, but it's really about obsession and compulsion and a lack of understanding of other people. So I really enjoyed it. Although I really liked where it was going to begin with, too. That could have been a cool movie on its own.
If the full price were $10, what are you giving Dead Male?
I give Dead Male $6. I would give it more, but like I really liked where it was going to begin with, and it ended up being a kind of different movie. Still liked it. I just didn't love it, or I was loving it for a while.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So next up, we have Family, which didn't you see a movie with a similar title about family?
Oh, yeah, I'm on the movie poster for
That's family. What I thought.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Different family. What a small world.
Not getting the same rave review, tell you that.
So this was directed and written by Benjamin Finkel. It's summer 2002. Watching her sick father decline, 11-year-old Joanna with an H makes a call for a good spirit to save him. But something else comes instead. And this has Ruth Wilson in it and Ben Chaplin. Tell us a bit about the family that you will not end up on the movie poster for.
Yeah, I won't end up on the movie poster, but it doesn't mean I didn't like the movie. It's just I didn't love it as much as that one because I love Ruth Wilson as an actress. She's somebody who can do just about anything. She can be dark, she can be evil, she can be sweet, she can be caring, and that's why it works in this particular role. I can't tell you too much about it, but essentially, the child involved, Johanna.
I've heard it Johanna, okay?
Maybe if you're in Hawaii, but I've never heard that. So she's great. She's absolutely great. And I love what they're trying to do with the film. It became very obvious what they were doing very early, and I'm not going to say much more about that. I will just say it plays on, you know, what it's like to watch a family member dying in front of you and how that affects a child and a family. And also, you get elevated elements of suspense when you throw in some supernatural elements. So that's all I want to say about it. I think it's an enjoyable enough watch. It's not going to win any awards or anything else, but I think if it pops up on your streaming network, it's worth a watch. And I would give it $5.50. That's all I want to say about it. All right. We Strangers. That's Raelle Martin, a commercial cleaning woman in Gary, Indiana, stumbles into a new job cleaning the homes of several rich suburban families. And while working, she tells one small lie that spins out of control. And if I'm not, can I say what the lie is, or is that ruining something? Because I read it in the description.
I don't think it's ruining anything.
Doesn't she pretend to be clairvoyant or something? Or psychic?
So this is actually a very difficult tone to capture. So I got to give a lot of credit to the director and screenwriter, Anu Valia, just because there's a really good balance of, you know, mystery and kind of like thriller horror. Like, what's going to happen here? Is something very tragic going to happen here? Like, I'm going to say this, feels very Jordan Peele in the beginning. You know what I mean? Like, there's just too much that feels questionable and skeptical. And you're like, what's going to happen? who is going to die immediately. And as you start to kind of go through it, there's a lot of comedy that's injected here because she has so much fun being this character and trying to like migrate through it. And she being Kirby Howell Baptiste, who is the star of this movie. And she does. She basically is like, oh, I'm getting paid really well and they want me to clean this house. Cool, I'll do that. Oh, you think I'm a psychic? Yeah, I'm a psychic for $100, girl. Like, it turns into this hilarious out of pocket, almost like, I don't know, like side hustle for her where she's like, yeah, I'll pretend to be a psychic for you for $100 for sure. But she's actually really good at it. And that's kind of what makes it even funnier.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, so it was definitely an enjoyable one. It was unexpected because I really went into it not knowing how dark the movie was going to get.
So overall, is this one that you would recommend people find? Like they seek out, they definitely need to see this and watch it play out, but try not to find out too much about it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that there's too much in here plot-wise that's going to ruin anything for you too significantly. I think the most enjoyable part of it is watching Kirby be in her zone and just have fun with this character and bring to life the comedy that we were really not expecting to have here. While everybody, she seems to be, the best way I can explain it, she seems to be the only one living in comedy. Everybody else is like having these very serious, surreal life experiences. And she's just like, that $100 though, man, like I'll be anybody's psychic for $100.
That's kind of awesome.
It is kind of amazing. Horrible. I love
and
it.
Horrible.
But it's so funny.
And what did you give this one?
So this one I would give $6 to. It was fun.
Okay. All right. Now I'm going to talk about a panel, if that's okay with you.
Is a good panel to talk about.
Yeah. I went to a panel called Mindfulness Over Perfection, Getting Real on Mental Health. And this is the one that was headed up by Selena Gomez and also had Mandy Teefy, who's her mother. Solomon Thomas, Dr. Corey Yeager. And, you know, I'm sure most people know this, but Selena Gomez and Mandy Teefy, I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, but they had a Wonder Mind, which is their company that's devoted to finding ways to address mental health. They have an app. They're working on other literature and making sure that things are available, services are available to people that are struggling with mental health, because Selena Gomez has made it kind of her mission to address mental health. We have a clip of the panel coming up here soon. But I have to say, I was really impressed with this. And I'll share a longer one on Patreon. If you're a Patreon supporter, you'll get a longer version of that clip. I really, really loved that panel. It was really fascinating. It was really insightful. It was very nice to hear different people. Solomon Thomas is actually an NFL player, and he really talks about the stigma of being a man dealing with his sister's suicide and his own mental health struggles and what the expectations are as a man. Selena Gomez talks about the expectations as both a woman and a celebrity. And it was really fascinating. And that's the kind of thing you get at South By, is you get these really deep, meaningful panels that kind of dive into topics you care about. And this is one I really care about.
That's awesome. And probably also really cool did they delve into like the TV side of any of it? Also, since Selena Gomez has been like a producer and she's obviously an actress in this, world, or did they really just focus on the topic itself?
Topic itself. I mean, she talked a little bit about celebrity and how that impacted her mental health over time.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's about mental health and having conversations and being open and listening to people and, how that's helped them and how they're using their platforms to, especially her and Solomon, because they have larger platforms, to reach people that weren't otherwise being reached and trying to make a difference. It was really insightful. It was really insightful.
That is really cool. Yeah. I love that.
So take a listen to Solomon Thomas from the NFL and Selena Gomez talking about mental health a little bit.
Ooh.
I learned this at a conference where I was speaking at during the season. When the professionals say, like a lot of the time we're listening to people, we say, hey, I understand your pain. Hey, I feel your pain. And he was telling us, like, that's not possible at all. Because you never know what that person is actually going through inside their head. You don't know how they're taking it. You You don't know how they're, you know, handling their emotions. So we said, instead say, hey, I can't imagine how you're feeling. And in doing this, I was able to see people in their eyes to see how much more validated they feel and just how more important they feel. These are the ways I change my mental health. And you know, I think it's just important to incorporate into sentences and just in a conversation, just like letting people know, hey, like in the locker room, hey, I'm going through therapy. Like I was talking to my therapist last night, just to make these conversations more normal. Or when someone asks me how I'm doing, like being honest with them, like, hey, I'm good, but I'm also a little anxious. Like I've got the speaking event coming up. There's 1,700 people in here, you know, so I'm a little nervous. But you know, just making sure people understand that, hey, like these are all normal things to talk about. And the more we can make it normal conversation, the more people can be vulnerable and we can open up these small safe places that might save somebody's life. You never really know.
Selena, I'm curious about you. With coming out with a documentary, did that change at all the way that you spoke about mental health and the way that you thought about the language that you used yourself and some self-criticism?
Yeah, we shot the documentary 6 years, and it makes me sick to hear the things that I was saying about myself in the beginning. It bums me out because I think everybody can relate to that feeling. You know, I think like everyone is sharing, it's important to speak to yourself with kindness, but I don't think I really understood that. It's funny because all the things I was bitching about then, I'm grateful for now. So it's really ironic, but I think it has taught me a lot about myself and letting. I mean, it's weird being able to see myself so long ago saying those things that I would never say to myself now. So, weird.
Yeah. And that perspective, too, is really fascinating to be able to look back and for all of us to see how the way that we think about ourselves and our experiences changes. And maybe we're grateful for things now that we weren't back then. And sometimes that can be pretty cool.
Okay, now we're back to the in-between. Amanda saw this one. Following her brother's death, filmmaker Roby Flores returns home to the Texas-Mexico border and dancing playfully between personal and collective coming-of-age experiences. Roby rediscovers the possibilities of joy and the aftermath of grief. Now, I know how you feel about this one. So, feel free to explain.
Okay, so sandwich method. I love the thought and intention behind this, the entire purpose of this documentary, right? It's this woman who feels like she's starting to lose the memories of her deceased brother. And, you know, he was a filmmaker. They were always going to make movies together. So she wants to go back to, you know, her home area and try to rekindle some of that. Try to take us through that and see what she can experience. The struggle that this film has is one of both screenplay per se and also of production. So production-wise, this was definitely made on like more of like a hand cam type of piece of equipment.
Low budget, sure.
Very low budget, which is totally fine because, again, back to intention, you know, she's kind of following in her brother's footsteps, if you will, but also trying to, like, be alongside them and, you know, simultaneously also trying to remember him and get those memories back. But for a film festival of this latitude, I was surprised
to magnitude?
See this magnitude. What did I say?
Latitude.
When I said that, I was like, I don't think that's the word I'm looking for.
Definitely not.
Is it longitude? No. And then I was like, no, yes. This is all geography.
Well, I mean, if you're trying to explain exactly where the festival is, then
maybe.
Yeah.
Of this magnitude, oh my gosh. It surprised me. It's not a badly made documentary, but it felt like a long stitch of personal video recordings with a voiceover.
Oh, gotcha.
So I definitely struggled with, one, staying engaged with it, and two, the other part of it that I struggled with, because I can get past the production, right? Like, I don't care about the budget. I don't care if you're giving me anything fancy. But I do care about having structure and having kind of a clear direction and path of where we're going. And throughout much of the documentary, it felt like we were just circling the rabbit's tail, the dog's tail. I'm really bad at analogies and words today. But that's kind of the direction that I felt like I was being almost misled in, where I'm like, are we going to have memories that, you know, bring us somewhere? I didn't feel like we had, you know, the big moment didn't feel that big to me. It felt like a very personally driven movie, which I can love and appreciate. Mm-hmm. But from an outsider's perspective, if you're not connected to her personal story, it's hard to follow this stream of thoughts to a final conclusion as a film. And I just didn't feel like we had enough of the impact that this story could have given us. And at times I kind of struggled with, you know, is this more about her journey or is this more about his journey? You know what I mean? And so that led to a little bit of the lack of clarity as well. Is, are we focusing more on him or her? I can't really tell. And by the end, it feels like it's a bit more of her journey. And I didn't feel like I needed a whole movie to get there.
I understand that. But I also heard very, very clearly your thoughts. And so I already know where you're coming from. And you said it very eloquently.
I tried so hard.
That's not the vibe I got when you walked out of it. All right. So
That's the thing is I want to love, respect and appreciate that somebody worked this hard to get something into the festival, and they did it in a family member's honor, which is incredible. You know, something that her brother definitely tried to rise to achieve, and she was able to achieve that in his memory. And that's fantastic. But at the end of the day, we're still critics and we still have to look at this as a film.
Absolutely.
And that's the hard part.
What was the score?
3 out of 10.
Boy, for a 3 out of 10, you gave that lots of love. All right. So
sandwich method.
Yeah, there you go. Wait till we get to I saw the TV glow. Try to dance around that one. All right, things will be different. In order to escape police after a robbery, two estranged siblings lay low in a metaphysical farmhouse that hides them away in a different time. There they reckon with a mysterious force that pushes their familiar bonds to unnatural breaking point. Stars Adam David Thompson and Riley Dandy. It's really those two. It's brother and sister. And it's directed by Michael Felker. I got to say, this is a really cool concept. So this is basically a low-budget sci-fi film where they got away with a ton of cash, right? And so they're trying to get away from the cops. They know about this particular location where if they go in, they do a few certain steps. I'm not going to give them away. It transports you to a different time. And then they need to go in there and do a few more steps, and they'll come right back to where they were, but the cops will be gone. So it'll be a little further along. Unfortunately, a complication arises that I won't get into, but it basically forces them to kind of come at each other. And then it becomes a very family-focused, stressful dynamic as they're trying to figure out how do we just get home. Time travel is fun because the rules are, you know, different for every damn movie, and nobody can argue that the rules are wrong because as long as you stick to the rules, they work. I think this film sticks to what it's trying to do and also makes a really interesting family dynamic kind of thriller out of it. What did you think about Things Will Be Different?
Yeah, I pretty much echo those sentiments. I think the sibling relationship definitely elevates this movie. Mm-hmm. Because you can really connect with it. You can connect with, you know, the things that they're describing they've gone through and that they're struggling with, or, you know, the things that one person perceives the other to resent them for, or, you know, kind of wrongdoings and guilt and shame that somebody may hold on to within family. You know, you grow up with these people, you make childish decisions, things that, you know, do affect the other person. And then you grow up, right? And you become an adult and you're like, wow, I really did some dumb stuff. Some people can move past their own guilt and the acts of others, and some people can't. And so it also kind of explores that part of a familial relationship, specifically with siblings. So I really liked that. And then on top of it, the time travel was really cool. It was fun. The action was fun. Like, I was very invested in these two and their story and where these characters were going to end up. And I really liked that they didn't convolute the time travel part of it. It felt complex enough that not anybody could just figure it out and do it. But it also felt easy enough that I didn't feel perplexed by all of the information that was, you know, being put into my brain, which is one of the things I really struggle with time travel movies, is when you try to overcomplicate it to make it seem very sciencey. Sure. I'm like, this is not astrophysics. I'm not going to compute your mathematical equation here.
No, because, you know,
nobody's checking your math. Just make sure your math adds up in your movie.
Exactly. Make your rules, follow your rules. That's all you got to do. That's literally it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had a good time with it.
I really liked Riley Dandy. She's the sister of this.
She was great.
Equation. She was great. Like, she deserves to be in some more things. I really, really
100%
dug her as Sydney. So, what do you give this one to another full price admission? Things will be different.
$6.50.
Me too. Me too. Right online.
Look at us go.
Go team. All right. Now let's talk about this. You went to a panel. So you get a panel now.
I did.
Breaking Barriers, Shaping Narratives, How Women Lead on and Off the Screen. And we got a little clip from that too. But first, you know, how was this panel? It's about women's representation in media. I don't want to mansplain it, so why don't you tell me how it was?
So what they're trying to talk about is the way women are represented, perceived in media, specifically for women of color and mothers. They're wanting to highlight the impacts that these sorts of discussions and impressions have on women, the stereotypes that exist, the ways that these very capable, brilliant, wonderful, driven, ambitious women have achieved the things in their career that they have. And then there's also the reflection of, like, hey, and this is Brooke Shields' perspective, you know, I did these things when I was younger, in terms of there was like a whole joke where Meghan Markle had told this story when she was like 11 years old, and she she like wrote a letter after she saw in a commercial, and this ad was basically like, yeah, women, it was something kitchen related. And they're like, women do it in the kitchen or whatever. Like, this is their place. And she was like, why isn't it not like people in the kitchen? And she wrote them about this and the perspective and the way it made her feel. And they changed the ad to make it more inclusive, to not make it so gender stereotyped, which is amazing. And Brooke Shields was like, when I was 11 years old, I was pretending to be a prostitute on TV, on camera. We were doing different things at 11 years old. So it was very hilarious. But then they do really talk about the impact that has by simply being an actress and engaging in those sorts of things, and how that potentially, you know, she was part of the quote unquote problem. You know what I mean? In terms of the way women are mistreated within the industry, the way that they're represented in the industry, and how these women also kind of took the reins for their own career. And trying to do things different, trying to break through them. Katie Couric told her kind of nightmare story. But, you know, there's a lot of hope on the other side of it. And they also talk about, you know, where things have come, how they've changed over the years since they've been in the business. Meghan Markle, obviously, she has her perspective specifically as a mother and the implications that, you know, she really focuses on that, as well as the perspective from her organization that she's representing there. And so there was a nice blend of perspectives from these women leaders. We had like the psychological component from Dr. Nancy Wang Yen, and she was really talking about just the societal mentality that exists and the things that are part of us advancing forward, where she predicts we're moving towards as a society with women's rights and things like this, all happened on International Women's Day. So it was a really, really cool day, you know, to begin with. Everybody's got like their superhero stuff on and wearing women's colors and all that stuff. And then to just have these insanely wonderful and talented women speak out and share their experiences. Katie Couric's is the one that resonated with me the most because she talked about her professional career, and the things that she had to do that men probably wouldn't need to do. Like, she didn't need to demand the things that she had to demand when she was accepting her position. The treatment that she, you know, went through is not what a man would have to go through. And so she really highlighted the challenges that she endured and the pathway that she paved for the rest of the women, for all of us. And coming as like this, you know, younger journalist, it was just a very beautiful kind of story from everyone's perspective.
That sounds wonderful. Now here's a little clip from that panel, Breaking Barriers.
Megan, will you tell the story about when you wrote that letter to PNG? Because I don't know if everyone's heard it, but it's such a great story. At a very young age, what you did.
That's so funny. Yes. I was
disrupted the flow. I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's the low net. I was about 11 years old, and I had seen a commercial on TV for a dishwashing liquid, and the boys in my class at the time said, you know, it's a women all over America fighting greasy pots and pans. And the boys said, yeah, that's where women belong, in the kitchen. And at 11, I just found that infuriating and wrote lots of letters with a pen to paper, and they ended up changing the commercial to people all over America. And, you know, it's funny to look back at it now, because that's before social media, when you had a reach that was so much greater. It was just an 11-year-old with a pen and paper. But it just, I guess, goes to show that if you know that there's something wrong and you're using your voice to advocate in the direction of what is right, that can really land and resonate and make huge change for a lot of people. So the voice is not small, it just needs to be heard.
Okay, so my dead friend Zoe, you talked about this one quite a bit as well. I know you had good feelings on this.
Yeah,
it's directed
strong
by
strong feelings.
Directed by Kyle Hossman Stokes, engaged in a mysterious relationship with her wisecracking and dead best friend from the Army, a female veteran is summoned to the remote lake house of her estranged Vietnam vet grandfather. And this has Morgan Freeman and Ed Harris in it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice that before. That's funny.
Yeah, so this is a interesting movie to talk about, because I walked into it not knowing much about it. I think it's an unfortunate title, but the title is apropos to the movie that's being told. It's a movie about, it's about a lot of things. It's about friendship, it's about devotion, it's about family, and it's about the military, and it really is a love letter to veterans. Sonequa Martin-Green, you know her from Star Trek Discovery and Walking Dead, is phenomenal in this movie. She's absolutely phenomenal. Her character is Merritt. She has PTSD because her friend Zoe died. Her friend Zoe is obviously dead. I mean, it's in the title. I'm not spoiling anything. My dead friend Zoe. And the whole film is following her deal with that. And as she's trying to deal with it, Zoe is still very much alive in her brain. So it's her imaginary friend, if you will. As she deals with her grandfather, who's Ed Harris, who's also a veteran, he's going through the early stages of Alzheimer's, and her mother, just that's her grandfather, her mother wants to put him in an assisted living home, and he refuses to go, but can he live on his own? And doesn't he deserve more respect because of what he's done for our country? And then it talks about the differences between veterans. And also, there's a buildup because we don't know exactly what happened to Zoe until the movie kind of unveils its final act. And that's where we really get all the layers. But ultimately, this is an absolutely beautiful film. And it has so many layers to it. Full disclosure, my grandfather was in the military. It's the reason I joined the military. So I very much related to Merritt and her plight. And, you know, Sonequa Martin Green, you know, as an actor, I've seen her in Walking Dead. I thought she was okay. You know, in a couple things, I thought she was good. I didn't watch Discovery, but she blew me away here. So I don't know if it's just because I haven't been watching all the things she's done before, but she is phenomenal. Natalie Morales as Zoe, even though she's dead, but she's also there in flashbacks. She's wonderful. She's hysterical, but also deep. And she has a really dramatic plight as the movie goes on. And it really, you know, is talking about mental health. Merritt is really struggling with hers because she can't deal with the fact of whatever happened to her dead friend Zoe. And Morgan Freeman, he runs group therapy that she's court ordered to attend, and she just cannot talk about it there, and she has to, or else she will be going to jail or whatever else. So he's trying to get her to come clean. And of course, Ed Harris is just great at everything Ed Harris does. There's nothing Ed Harris does poorly. But as her grandfather, as somebody who's wrestling with, you know, forgetting things, but also he has his pride. He doesn't want to be treated like a child. You know, there's a lot to it. And man, Akash Ambekar, he plays Alex, who's kind of the guy running the assisted living. He also kind of becomes romantic interest of Merritt's. He's very funny and charming, and it's kind of like a side character, but he's also, everybody makes this movie better. I mean, this is a movie I walked into knowing nothing about it. I walked out of there going, I want to watch it immediately again. I just absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it.
And what was your final score for My Dead Friend Zoe?
950.
Holy cow.
I just said I loved it. I mean, I said it like three times, so.
I know, but I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah. So we're going to sandwich this, I guess, right? That's the sandwich method? Not
sandwich method.
Let's get to the middle. And the middle is, I saw the TV glow. Boy, oh boy. Owen is just trying to make it through life in the suburbs when his classmate introduces him to a mysterious TV show, The Pink Opaque, a vision of a supernatural world beneath their own. In the pale glow of the television, Owen's view of reality begins to crack, and it stars Justice Smith and Bridget Lundy Payne. It's directed and written by Jane Schoenbrunn. Go ahead, Amanda. What are your thoughts on I Saw the TV Glow? And then I'll jump in where I deem appropriate.
So the first third of the movie, I was like, was this written for me specifically?
Because why do you say
there
that?
Are heavy Buffy references, okay?
Yeah.
And a traumatizing childhood. I was like, check, check. And we're going to invest our energy into TV because we can connect with these characters. And like, you know, they feel like family because we're little loners. And I was like, check, I get this movie.
I loved, and then, loved it up until that point.
Yeah, it was so good. I literally took a bathroom break and I came back and I was like, what the f- am I watching? I think I actually said that to you out loud. So I did miss a couple minutes, and maybe that's where it explains everything, but I don't think Aaron's review.
No. Uh-uh.
So after the first third, when they really get you hooked in, is when the story starts to take a very sharp left turn. Okay. I'm not sure that it was following Google Maps. I think we got a little sidetracked. not sure that we got to the final destination as well. There were a couple detours, and that is the general consensus of my feeling of the movie.
Wow. I love how you danced around that as quickly and painlessly as possible.
Okay. So there's a really beautiful underarching story that connects this movie with the trans experience. And that is beautiful. It is also something that a lot of people who were just isolated, traumatized, lonely, all of those really fun childhood experiences that caused you to have anxiety and depression and be on medication today and also go to therapy. All of those children who connected with entertainment, like all of you listening, probably, it has a space for you to connect to. The problem is it gets so off the beaten course where it's trying to make it so artsy that it becomes, what's the right word?
Unintelligent.
I was going to say unfun. Like, I was like, this is just being weird for weird sake, almost.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like we were taking the same path that we were originally intended to be on, nor did I feel like we got to a final conclusion for the movie itself that really brought me to a place of like, oh, wow, let me cheer for how this concluded. So,
yeah, I love the idea of how television binds us. I think that's a really interesting concept that would make a fantastic film. What does it say about us? You know, our own truths, our own journey. This is definitely about identity and everyone's personal journey towards that identity. And I respect that. I think Jane Schoenbrunn has some good ideas here and is going for a much more abstract visualization of those ideas. I think they're very complicated. They're very heady. I just don't think they land. I don't think Justice Smith's Owen is an interesting character. He's barely present and very devoid of emotional connection. I understand why. Doesn't make for an engaging movie. Bridget Lundy Payne, I think her character is actually pretty interesting. She's more relatable, I guess, in some ways. But, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm going to quote from my own review, great ideas do not always connect. And that's the case here. I think this is more philosophical than linear. It's not great storytelling. It just, you have to engage the audience. You have to embrace the audience. And also, no matter how complicated the subject is, no matter how personal the subject is, the audience has to come along for the journey. And at no point did I feel like I was really on this ride. I felt like you're telling me your story and that's great, except it doesn't make any sense. It's all over the place and it can't find a single track. Like it's constantly changing the channel. Right? It's literally changing the channel constantly.
Literally. That's yes. Funny. That was a good one.
Yeah. And that's what I think. It just does not work as a film. If $10 is the full price of admission, I give it $3.50. I think there's definitely some creativity, some really cool, interesting ideas here. And I think this film shows that there's a lot of artistic growth and potential there, but this is not the film. It just does not work. And I walked out of that movie and I said to Amanda, I guarantee you there's going to be a bunch of positive reviews tomorrow because people don't want to touch this subject. And I'm just not going to be one of them. I'm sorry. I just did not like the film.
You know what's really crazy is I have not had many. I've had a lot of really great experiences walking out of a movie where everyone is riding the high of how great it was and chit-chattering about that. But I've seldom, if ever, had an experience where people were collectively A, confused, or B, not a fan of it. But it definitely was something to chat about because there were people who really did like it. So
people. I didn't meet anyone. I appreciate that you found
some. They exist online. I know that.
Yeah, well, everybody exists online. But walking out of the theater, I feel like we were in the majority. Quite a bit. But I don't want to trash the film either, because if it speaks to some people and doesn't speak to us, so be it. You know, that happens. But that's a very progressive audience there, and they didn't seem to be a fan of it at the time either. But who knows? I hope it finds the people that love it.
I gave it a 4.
I gave it a 3.5.
Okay, we're not far off from each other.
I was being generous. All right, so role play.
I know. College students. Oh, you're going to read it?
No, go ahead. Sorry.
You're just excited to leave that topic, aren't you? College students confront sexual violence on their campus through a transformative theater process. Yes, I did read that correctly. This urgent coming-of-age story, which is Aaron's favorite, follows young adults grappling with sex, consent, identity, and power on their paths to adulthood. It's directed by Katie Matthews.
This was an interesting documentary and one that I haven't seen before. It's not so much kind of diving into sexual assault and abuse per se in the way that you would normally see it, right? Usually you have several subjects, you dive into whatever happened to them, you kind of go back to the scene of the crime or deal with the victims, the perpetrators, whatever. Or it's like a single case and you're just going. No, what this is they're taking students that have gone through things or haven't gone through things, and they're taking a year to build and create a, a play of sorts based on real experiences that they either know or have heard or unfortunately partook in some way, and build a play that can be relatable to anyone. So the idea is we're going to take your experiences, we're going to soak them up, we're going to write something and create something that can speak to people about sexual assault, because at this particular college, 40% of women are assaulted. It's an insane number. It's an insane number. And so they're trying to address that and address the problem. And I got to tell you, I thought it was fascinating how this handled, because they have like real genuine conversations about the different variations of what is sexual assault and what isn't. There are definitely people involved in the movie that are questioning if they even were assaulted, if they understand what assault is. I don't mean that in some, you know, because they're running the whole scenario back in their heads, like, was it assault, was that not, like, I don't know, where was that line,
did I okay it,
you know, whatever. And so it was really interesting to hear all of the different perspectives. I don't think this is one of those where you're going to walk away just blown away, because it's nothing you probably haven't heard before, especially in this day and age. But I do think it's nice to kind of get away from the heavy-handedness of, you know, just constant trauma when you're discussing this topic, instead of just conversation and just listening. And that's a big part of the movie, is listening to people. And I found that really captivating. I give this 6 out of 10. I thought it was an interesting way to do a documentary on sexual assault.
Very interesting. Very unique concept, too.
It was, for sure.
So, Mommy Farrah?
Mm-hmm.
Mommy Farrah,
yeah.
Lola, happily child-free at 40, confronts an unexpected pregnancy, triggering a clash with societal norms. Amidst her reluctance to embrace motherhood, her boyfriend Bruno's desire adds a surprising twist in their expectations. This was written and directed by Liliana Torres, and I'm very curious kind of about this story. Does it tap into kind of like the emotions of motherhood, the struggle of it? Does it tap into more trying to display how the perspective of people who don't want to have kids? Like, what's the angle here that it focuses on the most?
It's kind of going through all of them, honestly. I really enjoyed it. And lead Maria Rodriguez Soto, fantastic. Like, fantastic. She is so relatable, impactful, genuine, whatever. The way that they structure it is, she finds out she's pregnant. And, you know, she starts the movie living her best life. You know, she's having sex in the shower with her boyfriend. She can do whatever she wants. She can do her art. She can do whatever she wants, because she doesn't have kids. Because kids can be demanding. You know, she has friends that want her to babysit, and she's like, nah, I'm working. You know, I don't want to. And so she's living her best life. Then she finds out she's pregnant. And in Spain, I think the law changed a year or two ago, but in Spain, they had a law where you had to wait 3 days before you could get an abortion or something along those lines. And so she has to spend those days kind of reviewing her choices. You know, there's a lot of, it kind of looks at the weight that's put on women. And I guess I don't even think about it enough. I've got 2 kids. I've, you know, lived this life. I even hadn't thought about it enough in many respects. So as I'm watching the movie, I'm really contemplating people I know and where they are in their life, and different conversations we've had over the years. And I always love when a movie can make you think about yourself and put you in a place where, you know, you would have handled a conversation maybe differently, or maybe you understand somebody a little bit more. And I think that's what the film's trying to do. You know, it's trying to relate to people and say, hey, there is a stigma about people that don't want kids that is not fair. Because I think the stigma is you're selfish if you don't want kids, right? That's always been the thing. And I think that's changed for some, you know, it's changing. But there's still a lot of people that feel that way. Like, you're not really happy. You can't reach your full your full contentment period until you have a child. And I think because of that, it affects people mental health-wise, because they have this in their head that they have to have a child to be complete. And, you know, and that's what she's going through. She's wrestling with those options, because now she does have to think about that. She spends time with people and their kids, and people who are trying to conceive and can't. You know, everyone has like a different journey, and the movie is kind of touching on several of them, which I really, really loved and appreciated. And ultimately, just and even her boyfriend, who, you know, was fine without having kids, now maybe he wants one because she's pregnant. And it's a lot of the stigmas and her wrestling with what is right for her and what is most important for her, and her coming to the actualization of this is the right choice for me. And I thought it was handled very well. I thought her performance was profound and really, really bold. And I don't use that word very often. She really impressed the hell out of me, and the movie impressed the hell out of me, because it's a topic that, you know, I'm not a woman. I've never been through that scenario. It's a different situation for men. I know. But it really kind of paints the picture clearer for a guy to understand where a woman's coming from in those different scenarios.
That sounds like a really impactful and powerful movie. I cannot wait to watch it.
I was really surprised.
Won some awards too. So I know it was a favorited of the festival.
It was. And if $10 full price permission, I give that one $8. I really recommend it. It is definitely a character piece, but man, she, Maria Rodriguez Soto, captivating. Just carries the whole movie. Now, speaking of a woman that carries the whole movie, a submersive love story gone wrong is I Love You Forever. And it follows a young woman in and out of an emotionally abusive relationship. Boy, it sounds like a comedy. It's got to be fun, right? Stars.
There actually is some comedy here.
Okay. Well, it stars Sophia Black Dahlia. I am sure I said that wrong. So tell me about this one.
This one is one that really surprised me, especially in terms of tone. You joked, like, this sounds like a comedy, hearty har har. It actually is very funny. Part of it is from the dialogue, but a big part of it is from the delivery of the cast. And John Rudnitsky, Cassie David, and Sophia Black Dahlia are this fantastic trio of best friends who are single, struggling, and trying to get through, you know, what seems to be like their 30s, 20s or 30s. And our woman in particular that we're following, her relationship, Sophia's, you know, she has been in a 2-year hookup situationship. Okay. A story that modern day dating candidates all know too well. Okay. And so she finally gets semi out of this rut because she meets this incredibly charming, very like cordial and just kind of over the top lovey-dovey. He's also very chivalrous. She meets this guy and he seems to have it all. And it's one of those, is it too good to be true or is it just really this good? And, you know, obviously based on the description, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, and you start to see his demeanor change. For anybody who's, I guess, read an article on the internet after a shitty relationship, this is the equivalent of a narcissist who started off love bombing.
Oh, and got it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It really does a great job, though, of depicting the current modern age dating world of like, these are how you meet people. This is how this can also be psychologically daunting to people and why they could potentially be so non-committal, because that's very 2024, right? Like, people want to keep their options open. They have a good time. Let's just have a good time. Why do we got to put a label on it? All that good stuff or whatever. And this is also trying to look at how that fits in with dating apps, briefly, but I thought it was very cool that it made me think about it, and how dating apps give you endless, the imagination, the idea, right, that you have endless options. And so it's always like, well, I can always get one better type of thing, right? Like, the circle just continues to turn. And so it's partly that, and then it's also partly just like her trying to survive this relationship and what will happen on the other end. Is this somehow going to, you know, work out and things are going to change? Is she, you know, gonna die of this relationship? Is she going to somehow get herself out of this relationship? And it's almost suffocating at some, in certain points where it's like, I can't breathe for this girl. especially if you've been in some of these situations. And like, Sophia has a very, very real panic attack, or it appears to be very real panic attack on screen. And it is just, it is gut wrenching. So this is for sure one of her, you know, best performances that she puts on. She definitely carries the film. It's heavy, but they balance it out with comedy. So that way it doesn't feel like this just, I don't know, debilitating task to go to relive trauma if you've experienced any of it. So I really appreciated the comedy.
Really? Okay. So when you, is this one of your, it seemed like this was one of your favorite movies of the festival.
Yeah, it's definitely in like my top three. I gave it 650 in terms of, you know, things that opportunities. I can't say that everybody was a standout for the cast. Sophia really carries it in conjunction with Cassie. And this is going to sound really horrible, and I didn't want to write this in my review, so I'll say it here. And it is no fault to the actor himself. Okay. Like, I feel like I need to say that 14 times, but
you got 13 more to go.
Right. The guy has Ray Nicholson, and I'm so sorry I said your name. He has the face of somebody who he doesn't have neutrality in his demeanor or face. So for me, it was too easy for me to pinpoint if he was a good or a bad guy.
Okay. I got what you're saying.
That's like the best way I can explain it, because he has just a face that says it all. So he doesn't have,
he wears it all on his face. He wears it all on his face.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's nothing in offense to him. And this one I gave a 7.
All right.
So then we've got Marvin is sorry after he accidentally killed one of his fans during the filming of a YouTube video. Famed YouTuber. God, I hope this isn't a documentary. No, famed YouTuber Marvin Weaver must save his career by teaming up with Tag Tagger, an alt-right news anchor bent on cultural domination. 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 Yes. For anybody who watched Bring It On.
You're welcome. Okay. Well, I don't know what that reference, and I saw Bring It On. But Samsung Lee plays Marvin, and it's, okay, what this is one of the competition for TV episodic premieres, and what this is it's basically competing in the TV episodics. I was really surprised how enjoyable this was. It's like 24 minutes, so it's obviously a half hour show, which, you know what? More people can do that these days. We can have shorter shows. But essentially, you know, this is like the pilot for what could be a TV show if it ever gets picked up. And I hope it does. It's an interesting concept. He's a YouTuber, right? He's huge. And then this poor kid who is trying to make him happy ends up dying because of his stunt. He's basically like, hold yourself underwater, hold your breath for as long as you can, and we'll see what happens. Well, the kid ends up holding it so long, he drowns himself. Now, you can make the case, which I'm sure many of you in your heads are, well, that's not his fault. Well, that's not how the world works. So he gets sued by the kid's family, loses everything, and he's basically canceled by the world. So the only person that will hear him or hear his apology is an alt-right, very right talk show host. Think Tucker Carlson, right? And of course, they're spinning this as an unfair result of cancel culture. I love this concept. I think it's very interesting because you're showing how quickly a guy could possibly switch sides for what he believes in ideologically to keep his fans, because he has no more platform. The platforms cancel him and everything else. So what does he have to do if he wants to have fans or reach his fans? He has to go reach out to this kind of extreme guy. And it's fascinating. I really, really, really find it fascinating. This is a concept I would love to see fleshed out. I thought Samsung Lee did a very, very good job of bringing this kid to life and making him relatable and understandable. And especially like as this episodic kind of wraps up, you find out just how sorry Marvin is or is not. Really liked it. Really liked it. I give it $7. I mean, if I'm going to rate it, but it's kind of hard because I don't have the whole show, but I do hope this gets picked up because this would be something on TV that would be new and interesting. And it's got a cool idea.
Interesting.
Absolutely. Now you saw we're almost done, people. Hold tight. We're almost there. We've got three left. We're almost done. And Fall Guy is the last one. The one Amanda didn't see.
Which I can't talk about.
Nope.
Because I wasn't there.
Nope. Oh, man.
If you didn't know.
And did you see him when they rode up in the old 80s TV show?
No, you know why, Aaron? Because I was 6 blocks down the road standing in a line with a bunch of strangers. Maybe
they would have drove by on the way to the theater.
I wish they would have.
Oh, that would have been cool. It was pretty cool. They were in the actual truck from the 80s that Lee Majors drove. Oh, so cool. All right, Billy and Molly.
They also had people doing stunts on motorcycles in front of the theater.
Man, so glad I wasn't in that line. Billy and Molly, an otter love story. This is from National Geographic and Silverback Films, and it's a heartwarming story of love between a wild otter and a man set in the remote Scottish islands of Shetland. I guess you can take those words and make that whatever you want. You can make this like a little bit more romantic than it needs to be. But what about you? Is this a good movie?
It's a very sweet, like very stereotypical National Geographic type documentary. This guy and this otter, they just become like besties, and he kind of like adopts it, and it's really cute. It's a little concerning how easy it is to kidnap one and make them your best friend. But
that's what pets are, Amanda. All over the world, every pet is kidnapped.
But it's an otter, okay? It's just weird, but it's really cute. And obviously, like, the big thing is, like, you've got heart and you've got a lot of really beautiful scenery because of the nature sequences. It's a national, like I said, it's a National Geographic film. So visually, you're looking at stunning imagery, and then you have this really sweet story, which touches your heart. I can't say that I needed a whole movie of this. Like, I think a good Instagram reel would have done it for me personally.
That's funny.
But I will say it was good. It was very sweet. So if you like those little like nature sweet stories of like people, humans bonding with animals on a very intimate level, then this is probably a good one for you to check out. And I gave it 6.
Okay. Now we're on to two of our favorites from the festival. Yours is Black Box Diaries. Shiora Ito is the director, and the focus of this is a documentary. Journalist Shiora Ito embarks on a courageous investigation of her own sexual assault in an improbable attempt to prosecute her high-profile offender. Please elaborate on this. It sounds horrible yet fascinating.
So Shiori is truly one of my heroes now. This woman is just incredible. Essentially, what happens is she was a journalist in Japan, and she had an opportunity to meet with Mr. Yagamachi, I believe his name was. And he was like a prolific journalist as well in the entertainment industry in Japan, Tokyo specifically. And he had connections with Prime Minister Abe. So the man has people in high places, right? So she goes for this meeting. Next thing she knows, she's, you know, clearly she feels like she's being drugged. She was taken to a hotel by him and assaulted her, raped her. And I will say you definitely need to go into this one with a very clear understanding that this is not meant for somebody who is still healing, recent healing, because the entire documentary is after the incident happens, she's a journalist. She wants the truth. She wants to know what happened. The police did not take her seriously. She continued to push through even when they had an arrest warrant, okay? Meaning they had enough evidence to arrest him. They were like, nah, we got to withdraw this. We're going to call it off type of thing. So she just continues to deal with this, you know, uphill battle from all directions, and ends up being like a 4-year endeavor for her to get the truth and get him to trial and things like that. But it became a very prolific case because most women don't disclose their identity. Mm-hmm. She did this at a public press conference after she felt like the police weren't taking her seriously to out him.
Damn.
And specifically name herself. Yeah, it was huge. I mean, it was massive entertainment media news. On top of that, she then begins to, you know, you get to follow her journey as someone who is being berated by the public, by women who are saying, I feel ashamed to be of the same gender as you. Just very horrific things that she's a liar. A lot of things that a lot of sexual assault survivors deal with. Hers is just on a very public scale. And she basically was never safe. Now, the one thing that I'll say is really interesting about this documentary is she does something that I think is brilliant. At the onset of the film, so first she starts you off and she makes you actually take a deep breath to be able to put yourself in the right frame of mind to be able to process her documentary. Phenomenal. Love this. She even came in before the screening to tell us all to take a deep breath and we did it with her. Phenomenal. I love her. She sets you off from the beginning with the evidence she ended up collecting in terms of video footage of her being dragged out of this cab, incoherent, unable to walk or stand on her own. Very, very vulnerable experience. But I think the intention behind that was that so that way you didn't spend the entire movie also trying to determine if her truth was the truth. You know what I mean? You started off with, damn, we know for certainty, you know, we're judge, jury, executioner in the audience, right? So we know when we start this documentary, her story is real. Like there's no, it takes the not that I'm saying anybody watching would question it, but it is.
No, people will.
Because she wants.
People will. And I think some of that's natural, right? You don't want to just jump to, well, yeah, everybody, you know, because there have been wrong fingers pointed in the world. So, mm-hmm. I mean, people have that hesitation where they think about it or
even that, you know, that just the same things that she heard from police.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, well, if you were drugged, how do you remember? Ugh. Well, let me explain to you because I woke up in the middle of it. And she does give you those details. She does go through. So that's what I'm saying. It's very explicit in nature, not in graphics though. But her story is very touching, what happens, the journey she went through. And I think it's such a cool perspective, too, for a woman who's a journalist to say, my identity is to tell stories and find the truth. And no matter what, if somebody is going to fail me in doing that for me, I'm going to do it for myself. And that's exactly what her entire story is about her plight to taking this person down, making her assault something that had significant impact, not just to her, but has impact on others, both, you know, negative to him and positive to others. Like this woman is transformational to Japan. You have no idea until you see this documentary.
Wow.
It's insane.
I definitely want to see this.
It was the movie that I was like, I have to see this because I just need, there was just something about it where I was like, this just sounds fascinating. And she's a journalist, so it's well told. It's well structured. That definitely makes it easier. I will say, you know, again, another film where you're going to have to read subtitles because she goes back and forth between speaking in Japanese and speaking in English. Mm-hmm. She has really good English, but, you know, she is going to talk in her native language with people that are of the same language. And then when she's just talking with the person who did her camera work, her cinematographer, they speak in English together. So,
and what do you give this one?
I gave it $9.
Loved it, huh?
Loved it. And when I tell you that I was emotionally exhausted afterwards, like my body was physically drained. I cried so hard. I just wanted to hug her.
Did you?
No, she had to run to the other screening because ours was like 20 minutes late. Otherwise, I literally would have. When she walked in though at the end credits, I stood up and applauded for her.
Really?
Literally.
Did a lot of people? I'm 100%. Sure a lot of people did.
There are a few people who did. Yeah, I was surprised to see how many men were actually like out of their way supportive. after. It was very beautiful.
That's very cool.
Yeah. All right. Last but not least.
Ooh, what are we going to talk about?
Oh, something I can't talk about, so I'll read you the description.
Just kidding. Sorry.
The Fall Guy, directed by David Leitch. Colt Seavers, a battle-scarred stuntman, is drafted back into service when the star of a mega-budget studio movie, directed by his ex, Jody Moreno, goes missing. This has the lovely Ryan Gosling, the effervescent Emily Blunt, the beloved Winston Duke, Aaron Taylor Johnson, best boobs in Hollywood, Hannah Waddingham, and Stephanie Sue.
I don't know about that.
Truly, if you saw her outfit, she is an impressive woman.
Oh, I saw it. I was there.
She is gorgeous.
She's a beautiful woman. Yeah, and her Emily Blunt. I don't.
Sorry to side.
I'm not going to derail that. I'm not going to gauge her boobs.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't. But no. I can't. She looked phenomenal. Like, that is goals.
Your goals? Anyway. Yeah, not mine. Yeah. Not mine.
The Fall Guy.
Yeah. So, if you are not aware, this is based on an 80s TV show. It starred Lee Majors. One of the most renowned theme songs of all time, The Unknown Stuntman. I loved this show when I was a kid. It's basically about a stuntman. It's a part-time bounty hunter. And it's a reinvention for the modern era. David Leitch comes from a whole, that's where he met his wife. In the clip that I'm going to show, you'll hear Ryan Gosling kind of talk about the love story between him and his wife. But David Leitch, originally he did work with Chad Stahelski on the John Wick movie, the first one. And he's done Bullet Train and Atomic Blonde. You remember that long action set piece with Charlize Theron? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he knows action. He comes from the world of stunts. He was a stunt man, a stunt coordinator. And so this is his nod to the world of movie stunts. And so Ryan Gosling uses stunts to his advantage, trying to crack this case, you know, find out what happened to this famous actor called Tom Ryder. And he was famously a stuntman for him for many years, but then there was an accident and he kind of got out of the business. Now they need him because his ex, Jody, has her big shot to direct a big Hollywood movie, and he does not want that to fail. So he's going to come help because Hannah Waddingham is the producer of the film, and she reaches out to him. That's the setup. It's such a love letter to stunts. I mean, there's so many practical stunts, and the way that they do action here is it's a blend of both being on set and doing stunts with the actors and like following the stunt coordinators to action scenes away from it, where he has to utilize his stunt knowledge to kind of save his ass multiple times. And it's a fascinating concept. I really like how they broke this thing out. And I love the chemistry between him and Emily Blunt. They work so good together. They're just beautiful together. They really have a nice, fun chemistry. They are the heart of the movie. It's nice to have a romance built into this that works, because too often in action movies, it feels forced. I feel like this is really pivotal to how the whole movie works. She's the whole reason why he even takes part of this. He wants nothing to do with it to begin with, but he will do anything for her. And it's not one of those where she just hates him the whole time. You know, it's just, she doesn't understand why they broke up in many respects in the first place. And it kind of ties into the whole movie. So it's all connected. If you like Ryan Gosling's performance in Nice Guys, where he was Holland March, and that kind of not quite dim-witted, but definitely a little less than bright, this is like the brighter version of that. It's still, he's wonderful with physical comedy. He gets to utilize that here. He's wonderful with action. He looks great shirtless. You know, you get all of those things you want. This is all the quadrants, right? This is a very good summer blockbuster that we kind of need coming out in May. I think it's the first weekend of May. And it's a loving tribute to some of the most impactful people in Hollywood, the unknown stunt people, stunt persons. I just thought it was a lot of fun. You know, I feel like, the script kind of gets a little hamstrung here and there, and it's reaching a little far. But man, when you get to that final act and it just goes balls out, it's just a hell of a ride. I had a great time with it. I give it 750. Any questions you have, ma'am?
No, can't wait to see it in like 2 more months.
Yeah, you want me to tell you how
hanging out
how it ended?
With the peasants.
The peasants.
Waiting.
I guess. All right. Well, before we move on, we've got one more clip for you, and that's from the Q&A from the Fall Guy.
Can we talk a little bit about the amazing chemistry that you, Emily, and Ryan had? And also great comedic rhythm. Did you do any prep work to kind of find that moment, or was it pretty
We have some trust games we could show you guys that are really good for chemistry. I got very lucky. I have the best sparring partner ever. That's sparring, but I say sparring, but we also love spas, but we love a spa. Yeah, that's kind of how we bonded. We went and got, like, scrubs, you know?
Emily could create chemistry with the trash can, so she just came, she brought that blunt force to this movie. Oh boy.
That's it. Fall Guy 2 title. Blunt force. Got it.
Was it not to bring the love story into this film? Ryan, right? That's what I heard.
Someone was on the line. That's your better light. I don't know why you're backing up.
I'll explain. You know, we were talking about motivations for characters, and there was a little bit of a love element in it, but it was like, what's a stronger motivation for any character than love? And Ryan's an amazing actor, as you know, and he gets to do all these different talents. He can do romantic lead, he can do comedy, he can do action, and we were starting to see, like, this film had all of it, and we could lean into all of those skills that he has, and it got really exciting at that point.
But he could do drugs.
He could do drugs.
He could do drugs.
Drugs.
Amazing.
Dundee. I did some Dundee on this movie. No, but I was so inspired by David and Kelly. They have such a beautiful love story. They make these movies together, and they treat their crew and everyone, their actors, like family. And it's beautiful to watch the way that they are as a couple, and the way that they work together. There was inherently a love story already at the heart of this movie with the two of them. So it felt like if we were gonna get better about it,
I'm crying right now.
I love that. I'm gonna bring an audience question. There are stuff from Hannah. There are stunts in this film that haven't been seen in years without CGI. Was that a goal from the beginning, or did that happen in the process?
That was for me.
Yes, please.
Just me.
Wait, what?
Hannah, remember when you ran the stunt department for those 6 months? Yeah? Wait, it's my question for you, Hannah. I've never had the guts to ask.
Give it a go. Say it again, please.
it went away, but it was about... it's a question from Hannah in the audience. I thought it was a bit. There's been so many bits this week. From Hannah in the audience, she wants to know, she said there are so many stunts in this film that haven't been done in years without the use of CGI. Was your goal to do it without CGI the whole time, or did that evolve in the process?
No, that it was our goal. I mean, because it was a love letter to stunts and a love letter to the crews that make these movies, and we knew we had to be authentic in that world. And look, I love my visual effects friends and brethren, but this was the movie we really had to be true to the roots of stunts.
How about Logan's record-breaking cannon roll?
Yeah, Logan!
Man, you know, Amanda, I did show you the video of this, right? So you did get to see the Q&A.
Yeah, he was really, you guys, he acts like he's so mean and tough, but he actually recorded the entire thing. Obviously, he can't give it to you guys, but he did it for me. So I got to see the whole thing. It was very sweet.
But I got to see it in person. All right, so here's that clip.
Nah, dick.
Okay, and now we are concluding our episode. But first, got to ask you a couple things. And number one, best overall performance, Amanda. Who do you rate?
My number one performance is going to be from Things Will Be Different, and that is Riley Dandy.
Okay.
She was a lot of fun. I love me a fun, badass lady. I'm also trying to go off the script with actors that we don't already know their name for, including Samara Weaving.
Well, that just feels like you just got an honorable mention in there.
No, I'm just saying, I feel like we should be fair, and they should be indie performances.
Sure. Mine is Sonequa Martin-Green. Really impressed the hell out of me with my dead friend Zoe. I can't recommend that movie enough. Granted, I was in the military. Maybe it speaks to me more than might you, but people were raving walking out of that theater. So, film you heard get the most buzz, but you didn't get to see. So this is a movie.
I think we covered this already.
I haven't. What were you saying?
The Fall Guy.
I saw it.
I'm being funny, but for real.
Oh, you covered it already. Okay. I got what you're saying. Mine would be Monkey Man. I heard a lot of love about Dev Patel's Monkey Man, which is coming out, I think, in April 5th. That is just a fantastic action thriller. Like, it's just done very boldly, smart, intelligently. The action is extremely well done. The emotional impact, the resonance is really there. So it sounds like it's the real deal. So you should check it out. And favorite all-around film, both popular and indie. So you can pick a bigger one if you want, or you can pick an indie, or you can pick both. I don't care.
Well, I'm going to say, because The Fall Guy is a little bit of a cheat for the one that got the most buzz that I didn't get to see. Mm-hmm. I don't know how buzzy it got, but one that I was really hoping to see and didn't get to just because it was on the last day. I flew out the day before. So The Greatest Hits is one that I really wish I would have gotten to see. It has Lucy Boynton, and she finds art imitating life when she discovers certain songs can transport her back in time, literally. And I think that's such a fun, unique take on time travel that sounds very much up my alley. And I really hope I get to see it at some point.
You should also mention Civil War.
That one's honestly like a pain point for me right now. I'm a little traumatized. Oh, thank you, South by Southwest.
Fun fact, kids, we actually changed our flights and everything else. Got
another hotel.
Mm-hmm. Lost money on that. Changed our flights and everything so we could stay a night longer to go to Civil War. And then they changed the night that it debuted. Now, it's not, you know, it is what it is. You got to do what you got to do.
Things happen.
Originally, they said it was going to be on the Wednesday night, and they moved it to the Thursday night, so we were unable to see it. But it kind of worked out for you because you had a major snowstorm coming your way.
Yeah, and then Aaron just spent an absurd amount of money to be able to not be left alone.
At that point, I was done. I was just done. At some point, you was just over. Done. Yeah, I'm just done.
So, favorite all-around film, popular, I'm going to go Roadhouse. Okay. I had a lot of fun with that, sure. And I was also very surprised I had a lot of fun with it because I don't like people hitting people in the face. It makes me sad and I cry. Popular for that. And then indie would be Black Box Diaries.
My popular one would be The Fall Guy. Sorry. And indie would be My Dead Friend Zoe, I think.
I knew it.
Yeah. So, all right, we're at the end. Closing thoughts on the experience, the festival, anything?
You know, every year you keep saying that it's going to be your last year, and then every year you go back to South by Southwest, and then you change your mind. Like, after you get through the hump of, like, having to travel and, like, the work that goes with going to South by Southwest, after, like, 3 weeks of being away from it, you're like, yeah, I have to go next year. So I'm curious how many more years Aaron Peterson has left in him.
They have to approve me first.
if let's say that you have perpetual approval, okay?
I don't know. I take it 1 year at a time. It is an expense. People think it's all fun. It's not. It's a lot of work as well. And I don't believe in get the perk and don't do the work. You got to earn it. And I do that. I do my due diligence. So it is a lot of work. What was it the first night of the festival we went to the Paramount party, which I normally don't do. Normally I make sure I have movies, and I don't go to too many of the parties, but I wanted to go to that one. because Amanda wanted to go to a party too. So we went to this party, and it was at the Paramount, and it's called the Lodge. So they had a bunch of Paramount different things. They had a Bass Reeves set up, which I love Bass Reeves. They had a Halo set up. I love Halo. They had Mean Girls. They had a Mean Girls room. Mm-hmm. So you could
Ink Master.
Yeah. Well, they had a lot of drinks at this place too. And we got some all included stuff. So this dude drank too much, which I normally don't
do. They gave him an unlimited wristband and told him to have fun. And he went wild. He's like, let me try a drink from every floor and mix and match.
Yeah, that was my mistake. I don't mix, and I definitely mixed. And I know not to mix. So the next day, I was quite unright. And it was a long, long-ass day.
I've never been prouder of myself than the morning I woke up, got ready before you even were out of bed, made it to my first planned screening while you were hungover in bed. I was like, this is... I got to ride this high. It's only going to happen once in my entire lifetime. This is cool.
I still hit and I still hit three movies that day. What?
And you still did. Yeah, yeah. He's impressive, guys.
Yep. I got the stamina. Mm-hmm. And also won't be doing that anytime soon because, man, that's a lot.
You should have stuck with whiskey. It was fun, though.
Yeah, it was good. The parties are fun. Go there. Have fun. I recommend everybody goes. I mean, that's really all I have to say about it. Look, it's a... I know we talk about it as, well, if only you could go. You can go. You can go every year. I mean, mm-hmm. get a pass. I know they're expensive, but if you can afford it, I don't want anyone to be out, put themselves out or anything like that. But if you can afford it, I think it's a fun experience. And it's something I think most people should try at least once. If you can afford it and you're a big film fan and you're a film buff, go there, experience South by Southwest. It's an insane time. You have to be okay with people and you have to be okay with crowds because you don't have a choice. Those two things are going to happen. Outside of that, it's a great time.
It's not overwhelmingly crowded, though. Like, let me add that because I don't like people touching me or being in my bubble. There's just a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a lot of people.
So it's you got to...
A lot of great barbecue, too. A lot of great Ooh. Barbecue. We had Cooper's Barbecue.
Gus's Fried Chicken. Gus's Fried Chicken.
Yeah. It's all good.
Bucky's? You have a Bucky's nearby? Get on it.
So that's it. Please, everybody, check it out. You go to sxsw.com if you want more information on South by Southwest. That was a lot of movies for everybody to hear about. We're already, we've talked over a couple hours. My God, you guys just got better things to do, I'm sure. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode, and we'll probably just play it loose, right? We'll just freewheel it a little bit. Maybe even talk a little Ghostbusters. Who knows? But keep in mind, everyone, that many of these films do not yet have a release date. So check IMDb for updates. That's it. Thanks for joining me, Amanda.
Thanks for having me, Aaron.
And thanks for everyone listening. Be sure to subscribe to The Hollywood Outsider. Tell your friends about The Hollywood Outsider. And remember to rate and review us on your favorite podcast app. And the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.
Thank you, South by Southwest. Another good year.